the winner for the podcast of the year is Video Game Outsiders.
Hey, this is Larry here of Xbox Live's Major Nelson, and you are listening to my second favorite podcast, The Video Game Outsiders. Of course, mine is the first. Thanks for downloading and listening to it.
Live from Seattle, Washington, Redmond, Washington, and the Great Northwest, it's the Video Game Outsiders Podcast, all Seattle, Washington podcast.
What?
And now here's one of your hosts who's not in Washington, Kyle Jones.
Woo! No, I'm not in Washington, but I think I've seen the Sonics play once, twice. Anywho, welcome to episode 108 of Video Game Outsiders, the video game podcast that fulfills all your Video Game Outsiders podcast needs. If you're looking for Video Game Outsiders podcasts, you won't get any more Video Game Outsiders goodness than right here. You can try looking elsewhere, but you won't get what you're looking for, except for right here. Anywho, my name is Kyle Jones. My Xbox Live gamer tag is Big Slanky Jerk, and my PlayStation ID is Slanky.
Ooh.
Get out of the city.
Get out of here. Well, he made his Sony PSP name. We'll worry about that later.
Get out of the city. Kyle? We have to wait, right? To the 10
Talk
second
about
call.
Yes. Talk
and about I'm John Jacobson, Xbox Live gamer tag, BlackDog7, and my PSN handle is the same, and my Wii number is, and forget it. Michelle?
And I'm Michelle Madison, Xbox Live gamer tag, Coastal Michelle, and I have not set up a gamer tag over at Wii or Sony.
And they're not called gamer tags it either.
Whatever.
Is gamertag like the Kleenex now for these things?
It is. I like gamertag.
It's like a Kleenex or Jell-O.
Now, speaking of gamertag, for those of you who entered the contest and set our gamertag pick on the Xbox Live Marketplace, we have a winner, right?
We do have a winner. We're going to announce it at the end of the show to win the copy of Call of Duty 4, courtesy of the fine folks at Gamerscoreblog.com and
That's
Microsoft.
Right.
And, contest bot has... has dug into the entries and has picked out a winner, which we will reveal later on in the show. If you've been hanging out at the forums at all lately, at videogameoutsiders.com/forums, especially today, you would might have noticed the one of 10,000 forum posts about figureprints.com, which
yes.
is we briefly talked about it last week, trying to figure out what it was. It's this crazy custom World of Warcraft figure printing thing. Well, guess what? We got all the details on tonight's show because we've got the CEO, Ed Freeze.
That's right.
On the show.
The famous Ed Freeze.
That's right.
Legendary.
The legend Ed Freeze.
The myth, the legend.
He's famous.
And if you don't know who Ed Freeze is, you will soon. He is cool dude.
And you're going to find out all about figureprints.com and maybe a little bit about Excel, too.
That's right.
Oh, yeah. Smidgen.
A little bit of Excel love. And we got some, there were some awards given out this week, so we might have to talk about that. Lots of other news. We've got to talk about the From the Boards because a little tear. I got a little tear. I got to admit. Before we do any of that, though, it's time to do the 10 seconds probably at the top of the show, where each of us has 10 seconds to tell the world what we're playing, what we're currently drinking, and anything else we can cram into 10 seconds.
Michelle,
go first.
Well, my 10 second spotlight's going to be pretty pathetic this week.
Why?
It is, because I didn't really get the chance to play some of the stuff I wanted to play. John IM'd me and he said, I don't know what to do. Do I play Assassin's Creed? Do I play Mass Effect? Do I play this or do I play that? And I told him, don't play Mass Effect unless you have like a good 2 hours of silence to devote to it. Well, I couldn't find that time, and that's what I wanted to play this week, and it just didn't happen. So I promise to do that next week, because I feel like every time I turn this game on and my mind's on something else, or I'm doing something else, or I got a break and dinner or do this or that, or I'm coming and going, I just can't get into the game. I really have to say that this game, you really need like quiet, peaceful time and hours to devote to it to truly enjoy it. So I didn't want to not do it justice by that, but I did download some demos that I had been eyeing that I just didn't get the chance to get, and one of them I'm probably going to get made fun of for. It's called the Thrill Ride Off the Rails.
Thrillville.
Yeah, Thrillville. Oh,
yeah, I talked about that, recall?
Yeah, you were going to get it from your daughter, right?
I did.
Shh, okay.
Quiet.
Okay. No, I wanted to say, I had played a roller coaster tycoon or some game like that before, and I remember eventually losing interest and stuff like that because it was basically all there is. But the thing about this is there's little mini games you can play, and I think your daughter's really going to like it. I just think.
Well, she loved the demo.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't it cool how you're, like, in the park? That's
you
what
are.
I like about it.
You get to create this character, which I'm all about, in the beginning. And you're swapping outfits and hair colors. And, you know, it's got that whole kind of girly thing. And you know, and you're getting in there. And it's just very fun and vibrant. And I just think this is a definite buy for if you have kids or into that type of sim type thing. You know, or even adults as like, maybe a rent or something. So I was kind of impressed with it. Like I said, you get to play mini games. And actually, you're...
Lame mini games, but mini games children would like, though.
Exactly.
Like
it's
bumper
more
cars and Rock'em Sock'em robots. Sorry,
yeah, I think kids would be into it.
Yeah.
Did I miss something? Because I played the demo, and I don't know if I blinked or maybe got distracted by something, but I started the game, and I'm just wandering around. And I'll admit, it's kind of cool going to the roller coaster and getting to decide if it's going to be a cowboy-themed or a food-themed thing. And then jumping on the roller coaster and riding around. But I feel that I missed something explaining what else I was supposed to do, because that's kind of all.
You mean in the game itself?
Yes.
Well, the game is basically like a lemonade stand type game, you know, where you are control of this world. And you're supposed to keep all the patrons of this park happy, you know. And so what's cool about this, instead of having like some bar graph and charts and all that, you're supposed to go up to the people and talk to them.
Talk to them and you find
and
out what
they will tell
about,
you know, I got to go to the bathroom. There's no bathroom around here. Okay, so... Bam, build a bathroom there, you know.
Right.
Or I'm thirsty, or I'm hungry, you know, and then you take the appropriate action based on what they tell you.
Does it explain that in the demo, or
it does. Okay. Well, indirectly, Kyle. I don't know.
Yeah,
if
it's not really like a tutorial or anything like that, but it's just kind of if you read a couple of the things like that. But it is cool to be in that kind of view wandering around and not some stupid over-the-top view and just planting things down and, you know, like some of these games are in the past. So I think it's very, very kid-friendly. So I wanted to mention that out there. If a lot of people, you know, who have Xbox and say, I don't know what game to get for my kids, I think that that's one that shouldn't be.
Or Call of Duty.
Yeah, exactly.
And this is a game that's for all the systems, too. They have it for the Wii, and I'm pretty sure PS3 as well.
Yeah.
But I would not buy it for the Wii, because why would you? Unless you only had the Wii.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Another thing I wanted to try, because I was thinking about this for my sister for her for Christmas, and I wanted to kind of try it out firsthand, it was the Scenic demo. And I really, really liked the way they tackled this. You know, I was kind of like, this is going to be cheesy. But when I played the demo, I really liked the style and the way the colors, and it was kind of fun. And I really enjoyed the demo. I was like playing right along, and I didn't care that I had the controller in my hand. You know, I think this is the perfect party-type game if you want to, you know, for four people even, but, you know, the fact that there's only probably two going to be playing at her house, I would probably just get the game itself, but, you know, this is something
you can't.
That...
You gotta buy
You can't just get the game itself?
But it costs the same as a game.
The game is $59, and it comes with the four controllers.
Oh, okay.
Four wireless controllers.
I was misinformed then. Okay, well, that's a very good deal then, I think, to get the controllers. I was thinking it was like a lot more. But I don't know. I liked it. I like the fact that it comes with these HD clips. It's, you know, they have an HD TV.
Did you cheat?
No. Why would I cheat?
It's very easy to cheat.
Well, yeah. No, I found my only problem with the demo is that, and I'm guessing it's the way the game is as well, is that you can kind of cheat by just hitting the buzzer
exactly and going to the four
and then basically getting multiple choice.
Yeah, right. So at that point it's not you know like buzzing because you know the answer. It's who's you know like just trying to be the fastest person to hit the button and then hoping for the best.
Yeah, because, you know, once you see the multiple choice, it does kind of come easy. But I think that maybe these were easier questions at the demo. Maybe you can ramp up the difficulty, or maybe they get progressively harder. I don't know. I still, even though I knew the answer to most of them, I was still enjoying myself. And they take you through a couple of different types of the way the game is tackled with pictures and, you know, with scenes that you have to answer questions about. So I don't know. I'm not exactly a movie nut, but I found myself kind of getting a kick out of it. And I just know she'd really enjoy it. So I'll probably be picking that up for her. It's a good thing she doesn't listen to the podcast.
Who does?
My sister. I know.
It would be an awesome like Christmas gift, because it's the type of gift that you know
that you wouldn't buy for yourself.
Well, why don't you whip it right out there, you know, right after Christmas?
That's what I mean. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's type, you know, you have the family over, you can have four people, you can sit them down. It's in the, and even if you have more than four people, it's the type of game that you can almost, you know, play with teams.
Yep. Yeah. And you know what? I was going to buy this game. I was an inch away from buying it, and I did not buy it because of the rating. It's rated teen. And this, yeah, it's not a family game. It's a game to
but
play with other adults, which is kind of a bummer.
But I think that's, mature, I think that's, though.
I think that's because of the movie clips, though.
Right. Yeah. I mean, like, my kids, I play Scene It with my kids all the time. We play the Disney Scene It and the Nickelodeon Scene It, you know.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And they are addicted to Scene It. They love Scene It. And I was really hoping that this would be something we could play as a family, and we just can't because it's...
Maybe there's a way to turn off some of the content in the game, you know? Like, I think, like, I was watching Day of the King Kong clip, and he's getting shot at and stuff. Maybe it's innocent things like that that make it go teen, and they don't...
Or it's just, I think it's just content that's lost on them anyway. They don't know what Chariots of Fire is or whatever movies are in it,
right?
You know?
You know, I don't think there's going to be swears and violence. You know, I mean, I think it is a kid-friendly game in a sense. I just think maybe, you know, your girls are a little too young. But, you know, I don't know. I think it is kind of a family-friendly game. I know I would have enjoyed it as a kid playing with my parents. So I think that's it's a good, solid buy. And I like the fact that you get the controllers with it. I mean, for that price, then that's a good deal. On the PC front, of course, I played World of Warcraft, and Kyle was on for a bit, and it's nice to see him leveling his hunter, but I'm really just been into the Battlegrounds a lot lately, still racking up that honor, and I'm trying to get one of my final pieces, and Arena's really fun. It's just, I can't say enough about it, so that's why I look forward to hearing our interview later with in the future, sometime in the future.
In the future.
Because I was... And that's about it for me. I am drinking... Coca-Cola.
Yes.
I had to call it Coca-Cola because John said I always call it Coke.
You always call it Coca-Cola, Michelle.
Okay, well, I'll call it Coke then. I'm drinking Coke. John, what did you play in your wacky, distorted 10,000 million game world?
I played a lot.
Yeah, I know.
You know, I took Friday off last week, and it turned into like a big gaming day for me. And I
yes,
got
he was
up,
frantic.
I got caught up on some stuff, and on the 360... I had two goals. Actually, I had three goals, and I fulfilled all of them. I wanted to play Call of Duty 4, single player, because I really want to finish that. That's actually my number one game I want to finish. And I don't know how far away I am from finishing it, but I got pretty far. And there's this one mission, Kyle. Have you been playing the single player at all?
Well, yeah, okay. Oh, but did you get to the part?
The part that he was talking about, that one part.
You mean the really bad thing?
Yes.
Yeah, I got to that part. And then did you get to the sniper mission?
No.
Oh.
No, I haven't gotten much further than the really bad part. That's really cool.
Yeah, that
why
bad,
is it really bad?
That bad part really surprised me. Bad part, Michelle.
Why is it bad? Did they hurt a dog or something?
There's a twist in the story that you're not expecting.
We're going to have to talk once again.
Yeah.
Spoiler episode in
Spoiler
January.
Spoiler episode.
We'll talk about
but
it.
After that, Kyle, is a mission that is so intense. And,
sniper
and
mission
so,
sounds very
oh,
cool.
The sniper mission is so intense and gripping. And and you are like this badass sniper, and you got a partner. And what's cool about it is that this partner is constantly telling you what to do.
So he's spotting for you.
He's saying, okay, go over there, run over here, stay there, stop, stand, you know, and you guys are like running through this mission together, and you really feel like you're with a real person, you know, playing this mission with you, and you feel like you're on some covert op, you know, and you have to get to that level, and you have to pass. It's very long. The level itself is probably 45 minutes just for that one level. Because I know the last part of it is 20 minutes, because you get to this one part, and it takes you a long time to get there. And then basically it says, okay, after you complete your task, it says, okay, in 20 minutes we're going to pick you up in the chopper. And in real – so for 20 minutes you got to stay alive until the chopper gets there.
That's awesome.
Wow. That's intense.
It's really intense. So it's a really, really great mission. And the game is absolutely getting better. And it's an absolute roller coaster of a ride. And I love it. And then, Michelle, my top game – that I wanted to play this week was Assassin's Creed.
Okay.
Simply because I rented it and I want to get really far into it before I return it. And the game really does get better after a while. I got to the main city, Kyle, and it's cool now. Now it's a cool game. You know, the beginning.
Yeah, I think
is
the
slow.
Beginning is rough, and I wouldn't say I really love this game, but I think it does shine a little bit after the boring beginning that Kyle actually liked, right? Kyle, you said you didn't mind the beginning?
No, I didn't. And you know what? I think I've realized that I might be a bit biased when it comes to this game because
you bought it.
Well, yeah, I bought it, but no. But I think that I'm enjoying playing the game more because I'm really hooked into the story.
So he loves the story, yeah. And I was biased because I didn't like the story. I wanted it to take place all in a certain time. So
I didn't mind all the stuff at the beginning, but I will agree that all that kind of stuff is leading up to the real game, and the real game begins once you leave and start going. You know, you hop on that horse,
mm-hmm.
and you gallop into that first city,
and that takes a while.
Yeah, it does, and that's when the game really begins. Once you have that whole city to do all those different missions, and
right.
So what else?
I was really surprised at how gigantic the world really is. You know, because mm-hmm. I got like really lost trying to get to that city. And it started reminding me for some reason of Zelda, of like Ocarina of Time or something, with the horse and the galloping from city to city and all this business.
Yeah.
I kind of started finding weird Zelda parallels to this game for some reason. So, which is okay with me, but
that's good with you, yeah.
But you know, it's some of it is okay and a little stupid. Like, you know, if you gallop your horse past a guard, why does he automatically think you're a bad guy? I mean, that's
because that's
stupid.
Conspicuous behavior. The people don't act like that.
I think you that's gotta, efficient that's behavior. You know, I want to get to the other point really
Whatever.
Quick.
Whatever. You got to live in that timeline. People are different. You know.
Yeah, there is some goofy stuff. Like it does bother me that you're conspicuous. You know, walking normally with seven swords strapped onto your back and a huge sword on your side. Yet if you walk slowly with your head down, no one will suspect you.
No right. way. That's
and I realize I realize that it's a gaming conceit that they had to throw in. It would have been cooler though, you know, if maybe you could grab a cloak or something.
A costume.
That you
do. Yeah.
Something.
Yeah, that you could like kind of cover yourself with to hide your weapons and then stuff like that,
right.
which is obviously things that they can improve upon in the game. Now, yeah. I got to ask you, both of you.
Yeah.
Do you guys understand the save system? Like, I'm never sure. Like, you know, a lot of the times it says saving.
Yeah.
But it never seems that it starts actually.
There.
Yeah.
It's just updating the information, like getting all the high points that you found, finding all the flags you found, but maybe not exactly the point you are in the game.
But like, no, but Kyle's right though, because there's one part where I got a flag and it said it saved, and then that flag was there again after I died.
Oh, really?
Unless I'm hallucinating.
Yeah, I haven't experienced that.
No,
okay.
I'm glad I'm not the only one because I felt that a bit. Funky.
No, I'm unclear about it. And to be honest, I could care less about the flags. I'm collectibled out, you know?
Yeah.
And some of the flags are, like, very obvious where they are, but they'll, like, put bad guy guards all around them and stuff. Did you notice that?
Yeah.
Like,
you just go on a guard killing fest.
No, I don't care. I'll leave.
Yeah, me too. I galloped past a lot of those flags. You know, the whole eagle thing is kind of all right. I mean, you're having to find all those towers and climb to the top of them. And it's said in the game that, you know, after you do the eagle thing, that you could do a leap of faith.
Yeah, yep. Off each one.
I could only do it, like, for the first time. And every time after that, I could not make the leap of faith happen.
You have to, you have to do it into a
Pile of hay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would climb to the top of the tower. I'd go out on the little pole that's sticking out, and I'd see the bale of hay down there, and it wouldn't let me jump. It wasn't an option.
All
it
you have
always
to
grayed
just
out.
Fall off, and it's a leap of faith, right?
Maybe. Yeah.
No, but it's supposed to highlight the jump button is supposed to come active at some point.
No, you're supposed to hold down the right trigger.
Ah, there you go.
You're leaping into faith. But so you would think you agree it's a rent then, kind of like I said, or do you think this is a...
Well, I can tell you I did rent it, and I'm not going to buy it.
Right.
So I'm going to keep it a rent, you know. But I will say this, I definitely want to play it more, you know. I like it, you know, I don't hate it, you know. I think there's some things about it that are definitely redeeming, you know. But
yeah.
As far as, like, the batch of games that I have bought in the last few months, it's still at the bottom for me. But
pales in comparison.
But
to
that
like
just
Mass
shows
Effect.
You how great gaming is right now, because this is a good game. You know, this isn't like a crappy game or anything. Yeah. But next to these other titles, it's not my favorite one, you know.
Yeah. Did you play any more Drake's Fortune? Because I know somebody posted some videos on the forums in it.
I did not, and I knew that I was going to get flack from you because I said if I didn't. Exactly. But I didn't play simply because I wanted to play Assassin's Creed and Mass Effect, and I ended up getting distracted by something else that I'll talk about later. But
okay.
But I figured, hey, I bought it. I can play it anytime I want, so I didn't play it. So
no pressure.
And then Mass Effect, I definitely wanted to get some more flavor for that game because I didn't play a lot of it. And I played for, I don't know, a couple more hours of the game. And, you know, I really liked the game, and it was a game that I was thinking about after I played it for a couple hours. Like, I wanted to come back to it. But,
right.
You know, while I was playing the game, I kept thinking, you know, this is like watching a movie. I mean, it's like an interactive movie, which I don't know is good or bad, you know. It's good because the story is compelling, and it's interesting, and there's, like, twists and stuff, and...
Mm-hmm.
And the combat, I kind of was getting really the hang of it. I like sniping the people, but at the same time, it feels so much like an interactive movie. Like, I felt like there were so many moments where I was doing nothing but just listening. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's good or bad. I can't decide just yet, you know.
But I think that's part of, you know, role playing games.
Yeah,
right.
You know, that's just what, you know, what's expected. The nice thing about Mass Effect is that they're interactive.
Right.
It's
right.
not, you know, it's like, it's not like playing maybe a more traditional, you know, Japanese RPG where you're just watching cutscenes.
Right.
Or like even a game like, I don't think, John, you played it, but Michelle, maybe you have, like, Metal Gear Solid 2. I realize
right.
it's a role-playing game, but...
Oh, God, that story was interesting.
The first half an hour of the game, just a cutscene.
That's all right. It was. It was this wacky-ass story. But, yeah, I mean, the nice, like, what I said I liked best about Mass Effect, I do love the interacting and the talking.
Sure.
Don't you find yourself
Well, it
kind
feels
of...
like you're having a real conversation. And,
yeah.
But the truth is, I avoid conversations in life, you know, so...
Uh-huh. Well, this is bad for you. No, Kyle, he's antisocial. He likes it.
Well, yeah, and maybe it's because I'm really getting into it in role-playing, and that was one of the questions I wanted to ask you. Are you playing your character a certain way? Like, if you guys said, okay,
yes,
I definitely would.
I'm trying to be nice.
Okay.
I'm trying to be nice guy.
I would be, which is always a mix
I,
of
I agree, Michelle.
It's a gray area.
That's true. I'm answering exactly how I would in real life. But there was one part that surprised the hell out of me when my guy punched that doctor in the stomach in that little... trailer. Do you know what I'm talking about? Like, at the very beginning at the landing pad.
Yeah.
like I said, oh, like, this guy's an idiot, or tell him to shut up. Yeah. And when I did that, my guy, like, punched him in the stomach and knocked this guy out.
Yes, I've had another similar situation like that. That's later on in the game, and I'm like, I can't believe I just did that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where I thought I was going to get a just kind of a wisecrack kind of an answer, but instead my guy went violent. You know, that kind of surprised me. So anyway, I mean, it's a cool game. There's no doubt about it, and I'm looking forward to playing it some more. I'm definitely not giving up on it. You know, I know, Michelle, you want me to or believe I'm going to.
I don't think you should. I don't know if it's a game for you. I really don't.
Yeah. It's cool, though. I mean, why isn't it a game for me? Because I have a history of playing RPG games. You know, why wouldn't it be a game for me? I mean, it takes place in a space world, which is something I typically would avoid. But it's such a well-done game, and you can't deny how great
it is. I just don't think you have the patience for it.
Yeah, but and I think the way – and as you get further along in the game
– Yeah.
It's going to feel – and I don't know who coined this term for the game – but it really does feel like you're Jack Bauer in space.
I can see that.
You know, because essentially, you're like this troubleshooter that's okay. Because as you're going through, you'll be getting these calls from headquarters and saying, I need you to go take care of this. And you're going on, you know, and then you might follow their orders, or you might do these crazy things. And sometimes you'll get really badass and you're like, yeah, that's kind of Jack Bauer. Jack Bauer would shoot a guy, you know, to make a pal or something. So,
yeah,
so Kyle,
right,
are you
though.
Playing it like Jack Bauer or yourself?
I gotta admit, I've been playing it like trying to be a badass.
That's awesome.
Really? You're like telling people off, and are you violent?
You know
stuff?
What that means, Kyle?
Oh,
that's the real
yes.
you. That is the real you. Then that's what that
no,
means.
No, because I have because like Hence in some me. Of the conversation dialogues, I have been choosing things that would be. Wouldn't what I would normally choose.
So should I play it that way? That sounds kind of fun.
Subconsciously.
You know,
it's fun. I played Knights of the Old Republic that way.
Yeah, and it has been fun. And I think that's because I'm kind of going into this. I already know, you know, like what characters I want to play next and how I want to play them. And I think, you know, so I'm really kind of getting into the actual role-playing aspect of it.
Yeah.
So even when I created my character, you know, I made him kind of like this badass infiltrator who, you know, who will do anything to, you know, to get the job done. And, you know, kind of created, you know, as well as, you know, the backstory that you kind of create when you're creating your character, you know, kind of build a little bit more of a backstory in my mind. So I'm really actually role-playing the character. And I got to admit, it's been fun because he's doing things that I'm like, wow, I didn't expect that to happen.
So is there, like, seriously over-the-top stuff if you pick, like, the worst thing possible to do?
Oh yeah. There's some bad things you can do.
I'm tempted to try some of that stuff.
Yeah, maybe you'd have more fun playing that way.
Maybe, because I'm definitely – I feel like I'm afraid to be, like, mean, you know? I'm like, oh, no one's going to help me. Everyone's going to hate me. That's, like, my worry, you know, in the game. But maybe that's not the case.
But the great thing about this game, and it was the same thing that BioWare did in the Knights of the Old Republic games, it doesn't punish you for being bad.
Right.
All it does is it opens up more options. And it also – the game doesn't punish you for making one bad choice. You know, like if you, like, for instance, you know, some games, if you had punched out that guy, John, like, you know, the game, all of a sudden you are a bad guy.
Right.
Right.
This game, you know,
it's like your reputation has to build, you know, right?
It's all whose perspective, what is good and bad, you know? It's a gray area too. It's not like you're good or bad, like you say. It's a little bit both.
And that's why you'll know if when you go into your character screen.
Yeah,
it's not. There's not a, like a single bar that says, you know, good and bad, and you have a slider.
It's not like Quarter Alliance.
You've got a bar that fills up when you do good things, and a bar that you do when you do bad things. So it's not necessarily just it's not, you know, cut and dry. You're not either good or bad. You can do good and bad things.
Like a real person, because you know nobody is. That's what's so much more, you know, realistic about it.
And I think that's why a lot of people, you know, are going to want to go back and play this game again and again to play it all these different ways.
Yeah. Well, I won't be doing that, but it's definitely cool. You know, I mean, I'm getting into it. I like the whole weapon thing and the upgrades and finding stuff in chests. And you know, as soon as I find something in a chest, I go to the menu and I see if it's better or worse than what I had before.
Yeah.
And if it's worse, then I turn it into those gel things. And I guess that's like mana or something.
It's like currency. Now, I'm at the point where I'm like, because I don't know. Do you guys know that you can toggle the helmets on your characters on and off?
Yes, I took mine off right away.
I'm like to the point where, like, if I know that I'm going into like combat or something, I'll toggle it on. Or if I'm in like a city,
Like be a showboat or something? I don't understand.
Well, no, because he take like he would in real life. He'd put his helmet on if he was in war.
Yeah, and it's just like, I realize it's completely aesthetic, but it's one of that's how into the game I am and into the role playing aspect.
That's great.
I'm gonna go off for dinner. I'm taking my helmet off.
That's what it's like. Mission. I'm at the Citadel and going to a bar. Let's take the helmet off.
That's right. Let's change clothes. This is my relaxed evening wear.
Anyway,
so what else? John?
It's a cool game. I don't know what I talk about. I guess we'll go to the PS3 real quick. I'm absolutely addicted to Pain. This is the best $10 I ever spent in the PS3 store. I absolutely just love this stupid game. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, last week I talked about it, but Pain is basically this game where you have a guy on a catapult and there's ragdoll physics and you're launching this character all over this city. And the object is basically to crash into things and rack up points, you know. And I just love it so much, and I kind of figured out how to get points. And if you get 1,500,000 points, you unlock this new mode, and then which has like leaderboards to it. And it's just an absolute blast. I absolutely recommend this game. And I bought the Santa because you start out with this character, which is like some like teenager guy or punk looking guy. And so for 99 cents, you could buy the Santa character, and he's like this drunk Santa that's like a man dressed up as Santa, and you can launch him. And my kids thought that was hilarious. I was launching Santa all over the city and killing him and stuff. So.
And you're scared to play the scenic game with them.
You know, but this is so goofy and cartoony, though. It's not. It's just absolutely.
Daddy killed Santa.
No, I'm not. I'm not scared to play the scenic game. I think you misinterpreted what I was saying about it.
I know.
Is that I was hoping it was going to be a family game, and it's really not a family game if you have young kids, because the content it doesn't apply to them and their mind and their world and their point of reference, you know.
So, right.
But anyway, PS3 Pain is definitely a buy for me still.
So I got a question about Pain.
Yeah.
Because I was after you started talking about it, I went to the website and checking it out. And it goes on about all these different game types.
Yeah.
Which I thought was okay, because as cool as you described it last week, it kind of sounded like a one-trick pony.
Right.
You know, take a character and slingshot him into stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm going through all the different game types, and maybe you can clarify this for me if you. Aside from horse.
Well, that's a multiplayer game mode.
Okay. All the other game types seem repetitive. Like, it just seems like they're all just
it's absolutely,
something
the game's a one-trick pony, for sure.
It's just, oh, like, I don't consider knocking over bowling pins a different game mode than knocking over monkeys.
Exactly.
Well, it's all about points. It's an arcade game, you know? It's all about combos, you know? So sometimes you'll play the game and you'll just do the most miraculous string of events that will cause this high score to happen that you could only do like 1 out of 100 times, you know? And that is the draw of the game, is that you're going to keep trying and trying to get this high score. And it's a high score driven game. You know, that's why you play it. You know, just like, you know, a pinball machine is a one-trick pony. You know, it's all about that score, you know. And there's basically 4 single-player game modes. There's, like, the free-for-all mode, and then there's, like, an advanced free-for-all mode that the name escapes me. And that's the one I just unlocked that basically makes the city a little more volatile, adds more stuff to it. And then that one has leaderboards. And then there's the mime one, which is kind of a hoot, where this French mime is floating above the city, and you have to grab onto him in the air and then launch him into stuff, and you only get points for the stuff that he crashes into, you know.
What?
And then there's the monkey mode where you have to crash into the monkeys. So those are all the single player modes, you know. And then the multiplayer modes are basically flavors of the same. There's bowling and horse and all that, but you're playing against your friend competitively for high score, you know. So it's a high score game. But, you know, the biggest downfall, obviously, is that there's only one world that comes with the game, you know.
And then they charge you after that, you say, for everything else.
Yeah. But right. It's a really well-done game. It's not like some crappy little, you know, Space Invaders game. I mean, this is a fully realized 3D world that you're playing in, you know. And it's a fun, fun game. It's a nice distraction, something you could play for 10 minutes, and you walk away feeling, like, totally satisfied, you know. So
now, do the different characters...
Doesn't add anything or points or anything. It's just aesthetics and goofiness.
Okay. So that's not adding any replay value to it.
No.
No, not at all. It's just customizing, you know. Mm-hmm. So and it's very – the way they have it set up, though, they did it in such a clever way that it's so tempting to get this character and to buy the other character, because when you go to the menu selection thing – and they did something that Xbox really hasn't done – but when you go into the menu selection, you have choices of who your character is. Mm-hmm. And in that menu is the characters that you can buy. And if you pick them, it says, are you sure you want to buy this right now? And it like then you know the PSN store overlay comes over the game real quick, and then you say yes, and then it fades out, and you just bought it. So it's like there's a purchase menu in the game.
That's pretty cool.
That shows the stuff that you can buy, fully realized like it's part of the game. So... That's pretty wild. So, and then on the Wii, I picked up Geometry Wars for the Nintendo Wii.
What?
Yeah, and
well,
I
have it on Xbox already.
Not like this. And it's Geometry Wars Galaxy, and I was going to buy it for the DS or the Wii. I couldn't decide. I went back and forth, and I kind of posted in the forums, and Captain Chaos said, you know, I should get both, because that was his recommendation, because he liked both of them. So I said, all right, I'll start with the Wii one. And the reason I started with the Wii one is simply because the Wii one also has the ability, which is very cool, to send a demo of the DS version to your DS through the Wii, which is like a first, really, for a Wii game. So, but Geometry War Galaxies, if you don't know what Geometry Wars is, it's a game that kind of started in Project Gotham Racing, almost as a joke, really. There was an arcade machine in the garage, and you went there and you played this game. And the game is basically like a modern-day Asteroids, you know. And it has kind of Robotron-type controls, where the left stick is to move your ship, and the right stick is to fire. And you have these geometric shapes that are on the screen, and it has, like, these really cool effects and graphics and, like weird like firework type effects when things blow up, and it's just pure eye candy when you're playing the game, and it's very addictive, you know. And I loved it on the Xbox, and I've played all of them, you know, the two that were in the Project Gotham Racing and then the standalone arcade version. And and this is definitely the best Geometry Wars yet, because it takes this game that's a basic arcade game and doesn't give it a story mode, but it gives it kind of where you basically have to collect things, you have to unlock things, and you have all these different levels and worlds and planets and galaxies that you go to, and each planet is a little different than the last, and you get exposed to new bad guys, I guess you can call them, or geometric shapes, and each level looks a little different than the last by the shape and all this stuff. And the main draw of the game is that you're collecting these things called genomes, which is kind of the currency in the game. And the genomes serve several purposes. One, they are your multiplier. So if you collect, you know, one genome, your multiplier goes up one. You know, collect one more, goes up two. And you can go all the way up to 150 multiplier times for score. And this was introduced in the last Geometry Wars that was in Project Gotham Racing 4. So, and it's actually, once you play it with these little genome things, because when you shoot a ship, they drop these little pellets and you have to pick them up. And the more pellets you pick up, the higher your multiplier. And then the more pellets you pick up, it kind of accumulates all your pellets, and then you can use these to unlock planets and galaxies, and you can use it to unlock what they call, I wrote this down here because I forgot, that you have these drones, okay? And before you start a level, you pick the drone that you want. And the drone is like this little ball that follows your ship around. And the drone can have all kinds of different attributes or different drones to pick from. There's the attack drone, the defend drone, the collect drone, there's a snipe drone, the sweep, the ram, the turret. And so you pick these drones, and they do things for you. You know, so if you pick the collect drone, it'll go around and harvest the little genomes for you, you know. And if you pick the snipe drone, the drone will snipe the other the geometric shapes for you. So, and what's cool is that you have to use them to purchase, you know, the better drones. But as you have a drone, the drone levels up in experience. And the more you use the drone, the more effective it is at its little task, you know.
That's pretty cool.
It's actually very cool. So, like, I focused on the collect drone, and he would collect all the genomes for me because he's, like, the best one. Because if you get him first and you focus on him first, you'll make a big reserve of genome that you can then use to unlock everything else, you know. So, I mean, it's definitely the best Geometry. I mean, if you like Geometry Wars, or if you've never played Geometry Wars, this is definitely a game you're going to want to have, you know, in your library. And it's a really fun arcade-type shooter game. It looks really good on the Wii. I mean, I didn't for a second feel like I was on the Wii. I didn't feel like I left the Xbox world, you know, visually, you know. And control-wise. Now, control-wise is a whole other issue, because you basically have two ways to play the game. You could play the game with the Wiimote and the nunchuck. And you use the nunchuck to steer your ship, and you use the Wiimote to fire, you know, to aim at the screen and press A to fire. That absolutely sucks, and it is not intuitive at all. So the other alternative is you have to have the classic controller, which I have, and you just plug it into your Wiimote, and it's just like playing on the Xbox with two analog sticks. So yeah. I felt very comfortable doing it that way. So if you do get this game, realize going into it that you probably would want to have or would want to plan on buying the classic controller. And it does have Nintendo Wi-Fi, which is kind of a fake-out. There's no online multiplayer. It's strictly for leaderboards. Which is a good thing, though, because this is one of those games where you want online leaderboards. Because I remember, like, on Xbox 360, I was so into the leaderboard on this game. Were you, Kyle, at all? You hate this game, don't you?
No, I don't hate it. I'm just not very good at it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you have leaderboards for every single level. The major downside to the leaderboards is you can't look at your friends. You have no idea how your friends are doing. It's just leaderboards, period. You know, so you know that you're the 300th best person in the world, and you don't even know how any of your friends stack up, which I hate. I mean, that's a major flaw that you can't. It doesn't pull from your me friend list, you know. It doesn't make use of the me's at all, and I think that's a major oversight on their part, you know.
Yeah, that does.
And like I was saying before, it has DS connectivity, which is a first as far as I'm concerned. I know Pokemon, I think, did a little bit of that. But the ability to send a DS demo to your DS through the Nintendo Wii is something that I hope a lot more developers do in the future. I know Nintendo's planning to do that themselves soon, but I just love the fact that I could send a demo of the DS game and experience it, and that's pretty damn cool in my book. And also, if you have the DS version, you also unlock additional content. I'm not sure if you unlock content in both of them or one of them. If you get more content in the DS version or the. But anyway, if you tell the system that you have both versions, you'll get additional content somewhere. So I probably will pick up the DS version. The DS version actually plays pretty well. The D-pad is used to control your ship, and then the stylus is used to shoot. And it is surprisingly is very intuitive. And yeah. So it's a natural game for a handheld for me, because personally I'd rather play a game like this on a handheld, wouldn't you guys? Shooter game.
I think so.
Yeah.
But how much was it?
You know that's a good question, because I was actually trying to remember how much it was too before I came on. Let me look it up real quick. It was either, I think it was $50. I don't think it was a budget title.
That's pricey to play Geometry Wars when I can play it for $10.
Well, it was $40. Well, it's pricey, Michelle, if you have a 360, you know, and there's a lot of people that don't. So.
But you do, and you still did. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, but this is way better than any Geometry Wars in the 360. This mm-hmm. absolutely surpasses Geometry Wars in the 360 in every way, shape, and form. It's completely, there's way more depth.
But this is something you'd make fun of Kyle for, like, ooh, you played that, I can play that on my cell phone. You know, it just seems like.
No, I love Geometry Wars. This is an awesome game.
It is a good game.
Yeah, uh-huh. And you know what?
But let Kyle finish, Sean. Yeah. I'm trying to hear him.
But honestly, though, take your look at this from someone who is not you. Yeah. And I realize it's kind of hard.
Yeah, I can't.
You know,
okay, go ahead.
I know. But do you think it's actually good value when someone can walk in who maybe is only going to buy one or two, maybe three Wii games? This year. To pick up, Geometry Wars when they could be picking up Mario Galaxy or...
No, I would not put this ahead of those games, you know. But there's something about this game that is definitely worthy of someone's time, you know. And if you don't have a 360, how else are you going to play it? Unless you buy it, you know, if you have a Wii only, this is a great game. You know, I always try to think of things that way.
It's on the DS, it's on the PC.
Yeah, but who wants to do it on a PC? This game's not on the PC though. The Xbox 360 version is, which is very basic compared to this.
Okay, that's right. Galaxies is not correct.
Yeah, right. I mean, this is a robust game compared to the 360 one. So, I think that if you're a person that's always been wondering about this game and you only have a Wii, this is definitely, I think, worth your time. You know, and if you're not sure you want to buy it, then rent it. I mean, it's a fun game. You know. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot to it. There's a lot of levels, and it gets very challenging very fast, you know. And you're basically playing for medals for each level. So, and I started getting into the idea of getting gold medals for each world, and I like it because I like these kind of arcade games. So, is it a buy? Is it rent? I don't know. I mean, based on what I said, I think everyone can decide on their own. But, you know, again, I wanted to say I like to put things in perspective, though, because if you only have one system, you know, And if you only have the Wii, I mean, that's different than having all the systems and having all these choices, you know?
I don't disagree with you there.
Yeah.
I just can think back to those, to the days way before we were doing the show where, I own multiple consoles.
Right.
This would be the type of game that I would really have a hard time spending $40 or $50 on, only because of what you were getting.
Right.
And I really, I guess the problem is you're coming at it saying, hey, if you love this game, you got to get it. But if you love this game, that means you've probably played it somewhere else.
Right. But it's kind of
a catch-22.
Yeah, it is a catch-22, but it really is so much more than the Xbox version. You know, you have new bad guys, you have this little drone, you have this currency, you know, you have this RPG element where you're leveling up your little drones. I mean, there's a lot more to it, and it doesn't take away from the basic formula, which is so great about it. They added just enough to it to where it's like, it makes you want to get it, you know?
Yeah.
So, just to be fair, I will say it's a rent, you know?
Okay.
So... I don't think it's a pass by any means. And then on the PC Mac side, I actually picked up a new Mac a new iMac. I got a 24-inch iMac, and I kind of been catching up with gaming. My PC gaming, and I installed Windows XP on it, and I've been playing World of Warcraft on the Mac side. Michelle, I poked in there, as you heard.
Yeah, you said it looks amazing.
It looks absolutely stunning on the new iMac. It's running at 1920 by 1200, which is like higher than 1080p, which is sick.
I bet.
So it runs awesome on the Mac. Besides World of Warcraft, I've actually played another Mac game that I want to talk about. That's a game that I used to play a lot a long time ago. It's a game called Urban Terror. Have either of you heard of this game?
Sounds familiar to me. I've never played it, but I think I've heard of it.
Well, Urban Terror... No, go ahead, Kyle. Yeah?
Isn't Urban Terror like kind of like the precursor to Counter-Strike?
No, I think it came out after. Well, anyway, Urban Terror is a mod for Quake 3. And it's a lot like Counter-Strike in many ways. And in many ways, it's a little bit better than Counter-Strike, you know. And it's a very mature mod. It's been around for a long, long time. And I used to play it a lot. I mean, this is probably 5 years ago, 6 years ago, maybe seven. I don't know. But it's been around a long, long time.
Yeah.
But it's
August 5th, 2000, just to put it in perspective.
2000. So it's been around for almost 8 years. So, but why it's worth talking about today is that, I don't know if you guys heard, the Quake 3 engine went public domain. Okay? So, not Quake 3 Arena, the engine itself went public domain. And so what's happened is a lot of these mods have become standalone games.
Yeah.
Okay? That don't require any money to play them. And Urban Terror is one of them. And they updated the game. They released a 4.0 version. I don't know exactly when it came out, but it's absolutely worth checking out simply because it's free. And if you like Counter-Strike type games, you gotta play this game. It is so good. It's so polished. It's so thought out. It works very cool. Perfectly. It runs great. You don't need a really heavy machine to play this game, you know, because it's the Quake 3 engine. And I love this game. And I still love this game. And I loaded it up and I had an absolute blast playing it the last few days. So go to urbanterror.net and there's like, I don't know, it's like a 500 meg download. You get like 12 maps and you get all these weapons and the weapon animations are awesome and the weapons look great. And it's like this Counter-Strike Rainbow Six Vegas type game, and it's really, really cool. It's got a huge following. Actually, the following, as far as I can tell, is European. There's a lot of, like, French people playing this game. Good or bad, I don't know. But it's 100% free and definitely worth checking out. And then I played some Counter-Strike on the PC side. I played some more Counter-Strike Source. Man, I suck at that game. I'm so out of playing that game. I used to play it so much way back when. And I just got my ass handed to me over and over and over again. So I really need to get a microphone so I can talk to these
punks. Yeah, you can talk smack back and be like,
because I guess Valve has their own kind of Xbox Live speech thing going on, a voice thing. So I think I'm going to have to get a USB mic so I can talk smack to these kids. Because I was playing the game, and these kids were just going off. And it's coming through my speakers, and like my daughter's in the next room, and these guys are talking about all this horrible stuff. You know,
Huh? Oh, look, turn that off.
It took me a while to figure out how to turn the voice chat off. I'm like, how do I shut up, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, it's a great game still. But I played a demo for a game that is a recent game, a new game, and it's World in Conflict. And I've been seeing ads for this and reading stuff about it in PC Gamer Magazine. Do you guys know anything about World in Conflict?
It's a RTS, is it not?
It is an RTS, and it's a really over the top like military RTS. It's very realistic. What's cool about it is that it's basically like it's a 3D game like Battlefield 1942 or, you know, even Call of Duty, you know, but it's a real time strategy game like that, you know. So you can zoom as far away from the action as you want and can control your troops and move them around, or you can go like, you know, on the ground basically and you're like in the middle of the action, but you're still controlling them. You know, you don't actually take control of the characters. And the demo is actually really long. It's like over an hour, the demo. So it's definitely worth checking out if you like RTSs. And even if you don't, but, you know, it gets a little confusing. There's, like, so much stuff going on. But it's really dramatic and over the top, like, what you control. And, like, you really feel like you have, like, this, like, you're controlling the military. Like, you know, the real fun part is, like, controlling, like, artillery strikes. And at one point in the demo, you get to control, like, this big battleship that's, like, bombarding, you know, the terrain and stuff. And it's basically like Red Dawn. you know, the Russians have invaded the U.S. and every all the levels, or at least in the demo, take place like in small town USA. So you're like in like all these happy city, you know, like little, you know, houses and stuff, and then like Russian tanks are driving through it and blowing them up and stuff.
Yeah. It's one of those alternate history.
Yeah.
Type. The game actually, I've read, is set in 1989.
Yeah.
And where the Soviet Union is attacked the U.S.
Yeah, and the setup and the cutscenes are very cool. I mean, I love, like, the storyline because, I mean, basically, like, these container ships come into, like, the harbor and stuff, and these guys are, like, and all of a sudden, like, you know, all these jeeps and helicopters, like, pop out of the container ships and come aboard and stuff. I mean, that's something that could, like, totally happen. That's kind of scary, you know, but it's totally wild. So it's very cool. The demo, definitely check the demo out because it's really lengthy. So,
now, is it the fact that you can zoom in and kind of feel like you're more involved in the game is why you're enjoying it? Because in the past, you don't seem to like
I'm not going to buy the game. I thought about buying it simply because, like, could now. I could play it. But yeah, I like that, the realism of it, you know, and I like the fact that I can zoom in on the action and it feels more like, you know, like Battlefield 1942 or Battlefield 2 to me, you know?
Yeah.
And which is probably how Tom Clancy's End War is going to be as well, you know, so I probably will get into that as well. Mm-hmm. So anyway, that's it for me, guys. And I'm drinking a Sam Smith winter ale. And Kyle, what's going on over there?
Well, first I want to talk about something that I'm meant to talk about last week that I forgot.
Yes.
Okay.
And I played it again this week, so it's relevant. But so last Friday night, like it was around like 9:30, 10 o'clock. I was exhausted.
Mm-hmm.
And I just kind of wanted to play something kind of mindless, you know, because I was ready to go to bed, but I'm like, no, I want to play something for like 20 minutes or whatever before I do.
Yeah.
So, and I popped in Spider-Man Friend or Foe. And as I'm looking through all my games, figure out what I'm going to play, I'm like, you know what? And first off, I was very grateful because my library of Xbox 360 games is so varied now that I can pretty much find any game for any mood, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at it, most of these games like came out in the past 12 months, which makes it even greater. But, you know, and Spider-Man was I just wanted a game where I could mindlessly press buttons and stuff. For my only apprehension was the people are going to, you know, because the thing about Xbox Live is everyone sees what you're doing.
Yeah, and of all the good games out there, they're like, Kyle's right, playing Spider-Man?
Within 2 minutes of me popping the game in my 360, I get a message. What are you doing? Why are you playing Spider-Man Friend or Foe? You can be playing Mass Effect. So yeah. I actually have to send a message. I'm just, you know, I'm tired. I don't have the energy to get into Mass Effect. Don't worry. I'm going to play more. I'm just playing this for, like, you know, just to relax. And so I thought that was really funny. But, you know, it's just, you know, mindless fun. It's you're
I
playing
used to play Zuma like that. Yeah, you need a game like that sometimes.
Yeah. And,
like,
you
pain.
Know. And,
there you go. Yeah, that's not how you play it. You play it like a career, John.
What are you talking about? No, I don't. I just said it was like a game you could play for 10 minutes.
You're buying add-ons for it.
And I think this is a game that I actually have a chance of, you know, getting, you know, 1,000 gamer score on.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, so, when I did that
with for little kids.
Exactly. Exactly.
Perfect.
So I think I might be able to accomplish that. I played a little bit more of Assassin's Creed, but I did find it a little bit frustrating because of that save system, because it seemed that I had got to the next city that I needed to get to like 3 times, and then I would have to turn my console off, and then I would start up again, and I'm like, oh, it said it was saved, you know, but I was like back at the beginning, and it was a bit frustrating. But like I said, though, it's the story is really compelling me to play the game.
Mm-hmm.
Saturday morning, woke up early, said, okay, I'm going to get a couple hours of Mass Effect in. I got to play for about 10 minutes, and then my Xbox locked up.
Uh-oh.
Oh, no.
Eh, that happens all the time, Kyle. Just reboot it.
So fortunately, my daughter had got up, so I just turned my Xbox off and said, okay, I'll come back to it later. So Saturday... Go ahead.
Well, I was going to ask you a question, because you said your Xbox locks up, because mine does that a lot. You know,
how does yours lock up?
Just in general.
Just freezes?
Completely freezes. I can't do anything. It's unresponsive. I turn it off, turn it back on, away I go.
See, all of a sudden my screen gets all, you know, weird and distorted.
See, my screen doesn't change. It literally freezes exactly what it was doing.
See, like this gets all jumbly.
Okay.
So.
That's bad news.
Yes, it gets worse. So Saturday afternoon, my wife decides to take my two daughters out to see her sister, and I've got like the afternoon free. But I really I'm like, okay, I'm gonna play some games, but I also want to eat some chips.
Uh-oh.
Of course.
So I'm like, well, you know what? I'm gonna throw in a movie first because I've got like a, you know, I've got a whole bunch of like HD DVDs that I needed to watch. So I popped that in. 5 minutes into the movie. Xbox gets all messed up.
Uh-oh.
Try putting in other games. Same thing.
At this point, is it freezing again, or is it all...
No, it's the jumbles.
It gets all jumbles, and then so as of Sunday night, I had the Red Rings of Death. My Xbox has died again.
What are you people doing to your Xboxes? I haven't had one problem. My boyfriend hasn't had one problem. My sister hasn't had one problem.
And this was...
Bad.
This was my fear, you know, with... Like sending my Xbox in the first place.
Yeah.
Because I knew I was getting someone else's broken Xbox.
You're getting a refurb. That happened to me when I bought a PS2 refurb. I went into the store three times and I was just getting a broken one over and over and over.
And, it made it easier to swallow that because I didn't have to pay for it.
Right.
But I'm just, it's just so, like I was.
Yeah, that's annoyance. I mean.
So it's absolutely dead. You got the Red Ring of Death and all that business.
Yeah. Yeah. So my Xbox. Gone. Number
Every
two,
time you turn it on, red lights.
Now, well, what happens is you turn it on, and it will load up the screen, and then I get the squiggly lines, and then I get the red lights.
Oh, jeez.
So it's kind of sad.
It is sad, Kyle.
So how did you rectify the situation?
Well, you see, I don't know how I'm going to rectify the situation.
There's the nice ones with the elites and
you should get an arcade pack actually and just swap hard drives. That's the way to go.
Well, you see, and that's what I'm thinking of doing. But then I'm not getting another console.
But what?
Well, if I get you see, because here's the thing: if I get a new 360,
yeah,
I'm not going to be getting a PS3.
Right. So you could get a PS3 and just have your Xbox replaced for free.
But I see what you're
saying. If you buy another Xbox, you can't get a PS3 because the money was spent for that.
Yeah, but you see, now here's the problem. Funny enough, someone I work with, their 360 died over the weekend. It called, and they figured it's probably going to be 4 to 6 weeks before he gets his back because of the holiday.
Oh, my God. Yeah. So are you under any kind of warranty still, or are you just out of luck
fortunately,
right now?
No, fortunately, I am under the warranty.
Then did you call?
No, I haven't called yet.
Oh. Well, you need to call them, Kyle.
Well, yes, I know I need to call, but it was just like you know, like I had other things, and then my mind was spinning. I'm thinking, oh, you know, to hell with my 360. I'm moving on, and then there was other things. Made me think, well, maybe I should just get a new one, you know, like one that I know is going to work, and then I can send the other one back, and then whenever I get it back, that's fine. And now I have, you know, like a good, you know, upscaling DVD player for my second TV. So
right.
I don't know.
Buy an Elite. I will say this, though. The idea of a larger hard drive is very, very appealing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've been thinking about that, too.
Because, with the downloadable games.
Well, I mean, I downloaded Ocean's 13.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it was like 5.5 gigs.
Yeah.
You would not believe what I had to do to get that movie on my system.
Yeah, did you go through and delete all the crap?
It took me 15 minutes to get the space on there. I had to be very tactical about what I deleted.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that concerns me because, like, part of the appeal of like some of those Xbox originals, is that you know I could be laying in the kitchen, and this one kind of you know appeals to my laziness is that you know like oh I want to play something, but you know what I don't want to pop something in. Oh, you know what, I haven't played Indigo Prophecy because I'm not going to buy Indigo Prophecy until I get the urge to play it.
Right.
Yeah.
But if all of a sudden I have to I got to go delete demos and at that point it becomes a nuisance and I'd probably just give up and say there's that Need for Speed demo. Which, by the way, I think I downloaded and never played because it was sitting on my system, which we talked about last week.
Well, I downloaded Psychonauts, you know, through the Xbox. And evidently that 3 gigs that game took up was the buffer that I've been using for the past year to download things because I am now completely maxed out on my system. and I had to delete like all these arcade games that I bought, mind you, you know, not demos, games that I actually bought.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't believe how much space the Tom Clancy games take up.
Mm-hmm.
Like Rainbow Six is using like 1.6 gigabytes, and Ghost Recon's using like 1.3 gigabytes. You know.
Well, yeah. You have to remember there's all those extra like how many map packs were there?
Right.
For those. Mm-hmm. So it's all those, you know, those are going to.
There's a lot of room going on there. Yep.
Right. So anyway, there's a lot of room, but for at 20 gigs, I mean, it makes your life hell at quick.
Yeah. So, Kyle, what are you going to do?
I don't know yet, but.
You got to call Microsoft.
Oh yes, yeah. I realize I have to do that, which I will do tomorrow. Like Saturday afternoon, I was pissed off. Like, you know, I was just like, "The hell with Microsoft! I'm getting a PS3. I'm getting on the Sony boat. Screw Microsoft." And I had gotten remember last week I was talking about the past 2 weeks not being able to like sign up for my PlayStation ID.
Yeah.
Because except my name. Well, I got a message over Xbox Live, ironically enough, from Twisted Juggalo, who had told me that you can't have spaces in your PlayStation network name.
Okay.
So that was my problem. I was, you know, my gamer tag is big space lanky space jerk. And so I went on to, you know, so I finished signing up, and I didn't want just all one word because I hate that. So I got slanky. And one of the cool things about the PlayStation Store is you can get demos for your PSP.
Yep.
And you don't have to do like this goofy backwards if you wanted demos in the past, you'd have to go to other sites and download the zip file and then unzip it and install it into a certain folder. When you do it through the PlayStation Store, there's this little installer that gets loaded up. You plug your PSP in, you click on a demo to download, it downloads it and installs it for you.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought this was great, except for the fact that it took 3 hours to download a demo for my PSP.
What?
A 500 meg file took 3 hours.
Well, what's wrong with your connection?
My connection, I was testing my connection. It was fast. I actually tested it again with another demo at work today, or sorry, yesterday, and it was still that slow. So it wasn't just...
server.
Well, Kyle, I've downloaded tons of demos from the PSN store.
Yes, but you've done it directly to your
PS3.
Yeah.
PS3. Now, I don't know if it's something, you know, if it's because I was downloading it for a PSP and it's done through my PC or whatever. But it was kind of lame, and then at that point I was like, you know, Sony sucks. I don't know what I'm going to do.
Yeah, but you're like in some weird part of North America though.
He's not Ethiopia. He's in Canada, John.
I'm like 40 minutes out of like the most populated area of Canada. Like, trust me, I don't live in the wilderness.
Well,
so you know, so then I'll
see. I don't know.
So you know, I was all pissed off. I'm like, oh, to hell with this! You know what? I'm just gonna buy a Wii, and John will love me. Screw this! And it just so happened that I was at Toys R Us on Sunday night, and I'm hearing this. You know, I'm hearing this poor woman who decided, you know, 2 weeks before Christmas, he should ask, you know, her kids what they wanted for, you know, for Christmas. And you know.
They wanted a Wii.
So I'm listening to her talk to the store clerk. And it's like, so you don't have any now, but will they be in later this week? And no, we're not going to have any until the new year. Oh, so you mean like next weekend? No. Not until, you know, sometime in January. But you'll have some before Christmas, right? Can I pre-order it now? Can I put it on the list? Oh my! So I came home and I have no idea what I was going
to
do. So.
You don't know who to give your love to.
No, I don't. But anyway, the demo that I downloaded, and it was one of the games I was really excited about, was SOCOM Tactical Strike.
Yeah.
Essentially, it's like a strategy game. And John, I think you might have appreciated it just by the description. Essentially, this is like Full Spectrum Warrior on your PSP.
Okay. Which I never really liked, but okay.
I thought you liked Full Spectrum Warrior.
Maybe. I mean, I played it for a little while. I don't remember,
liking and not liking is a fine line with John.
I don't remember,
that's
like...
true.
I remember when it came out thinking it was kind of revolutionary because the graphics were really good and all that business.
Okay.
And sending your squads to take cover was kind of cool, but I don't think it had any lasting appeal, did it?
Well... No, probably not, but I think it was, you know, it was a cool game. The problem with, and essentially this is what this game is, it, you know, you take control of two two-man fire teams, and you're moving them around the map and you know, giving them orders and trying to take out the enemy. But you don't control anything. You know, it's just like, shoot in this area. Hold your fire. You know, take cover against this wall. The problem, the biggest problem is that I seem to remember in Full Spectrum Warrior, it was very easy to move your men around and position them in certain places.
Mm-hmm.
In this game, it's not. And I think it's just because of the view. So if you're behind cover and you want your team to move to the next building, you have your cursor, but it's always from the perspective of where your people or your characters are standing. So if you want, you know, to move your guys, like, you know, two buildings down and to kind of like hide around a corner, you kind of have to guess where that cursor is.
Right.
Because the camera is staying stationary to where your characters are, not with the cursor. So I was a bit disappointed with it. And
mm-hmm.
It was a game I was really excited about getting and playing. And after
the
playing
reviews were somewhat decent, right? We got like 8s and 9s kind of thing.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess I just expected more of it. Mm-hmm. I will say that the game looks really good.
Really?
It does look really good for a PSP game.
So I predict I'll have a PSP within the next couple weeks.
I think
is this one to buy?
No, I think you would be better served picking up SOCOM 2.
So is that the very first game that I should seek out the day after Christmas?
Definitely.
I should get SOCOM.
You need
no
SOCOM
other game.
I honestly,
yeah,
knowing how you enjoy playing Counter-Strike,
yeah.
I think this is the game. You know what? You think your wife's getting, you know, a SOCOM for you? You know what? Slip her an extra 20 because I think you can get SOCOM 2 for like $20 now.
Really?
Make sure you pick this up too.
So besides SOCOM, what else should I be looking for? Not to derail what you're talking about, but I'm curious.
No, the Siphon Filter.
Okay.
Is really good. Once again, I would suggest picking up a Dark Mirror, which is a budget title now. It's $20. If you liked Ratchet and Clank,
yeah,
Ratchet and Clank is really good on the PSP. If you're getting the Star Wars, you know, game, you're obviously going to have a Battlefront Renegade Squadron, which is fun to play. And also, Daxter is actually a really good game.
Mm-hmm.
So those would be my. And I would, you know, I also, you know, the games that you don't like, you know, like those Untold Legends or the, you know, the Marvel Ultimate Alliance, that, you know, like those top down.
Yeah, John likes to be up close.
John doesn't like those games, but I think those games play really well on the PSP.
Yeah.
I think they're really fun. So, but if you only had to get one game, John.
Yeah, SOCOM.
SOCOM
huh?
2.
SOCOM.
I think you will love it. You will be. You know, because of how much you like playing Counter-Strike, and
mm-hmm.
love it.
I'm in.
So, the one thing that I, you know, after all this other crap, the one thing that I ended up probably spending the most time is playing World of Warcraft.
Mm-hmm.
And oh,
saw you on your Hunter. You're liking him?
Oh, you know, it's one of these things where, you know, when you actually sit down and spend a bit of time.
Yeah.
And you know what, maybe because of all this other crap that I've had going on with my 360 and not being able to, you know, decide what to do and everything.
Yeah.
Jumping into WoW for quite a bit of time this weekend felt mm-hmm. like a warm, cozy blanket.
It is. It's very, it's comforting. There's no problems to have to worry about. Like,
So Kyle, are you on Shadow Song?
Yeah.
Yes.
So you need to send me an invite or a friend request or however that business works.
You gotta be on.
I have no idea what your character's name is.
Just Black Dog.
BLK.
Yeah. BLACK.
Are you in the guild?
He's in the guild.
I am in the guild.
He's in the guild. He makes appearances rarely.
I make appearances rarely. I'm level 3.
I sent him a wand. I sent him some money.
No, I saw that you sent. Did you send me something again, Michelle? I got mail.
I might have. I sent you a couple of stuff just to get you encouraged.
The problem with, you know, when you start out, you're far away from a mailbox. I don't know where it is.
Goldshire is probably going to be your closest one, but we'll anytime you come on the game, I'll direct you to it. Don't worry about that. But
I need
yeah.
Help.
So
you
when
made
I
your hearth in Stormwind, the Black Dog, so you're fine. Yeah.
So when I jumped on, Michelle sent me a message about the Guild Bank.
Yep.
The Guild Bank.
We have a Guild Bank. Okay, the Guild Bank is something that it's something that they added with the last patch, the big 2.3, and yeah. and I think some other people in the guild split in, and we bought a guild tab, which was like 200 gold or something, and you can buy up to like 6 of these, and what it is it's a place where you can put money for everybody to use for like repairs and stuff, but more so just like, you know, stuff that you may have that you don't want to throw out, that you don't want to sell, that you want to like offer up to people in the guild. So I've been putting cloth in there, and people have been putting enchanting supplies. I know Electrolux is a cook. She's been putting some food in there. So everybody's contributing, like using their skills and what they do, and they put it in the bank, and it's really up for grabs for anybody in the guild to take it.
Yeah. It's like this savings and loan. I mean, Mr. Potter is going to squash this thing.
You don't have to loan. You just, you know, I think it's really cool, and it's a nice feature, and, you know, it's a nice thing to go in there, and if you've collected, you know, 20 linen cloth and you don't need them, to put them in the bank. And
I saw it, and I actually found the guild bank, but I kind of felt intimidated by it because there's all this good stuff in it.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm making crappy, you know, leather vests. You know, so I kind of felt like I had nothing to contribute.
So where is it? Is it a place?
It's in the bank. It's going to be another tab in the bank. You know, you talk to a banker to get your stuff. It's going to be like on the walls in the bank, and that's where you access the guild bank, and you'll get to see all the stuff and all the money and stuff like that in there.
And anyone can just take anything from it.
Basically, it's set up to where like certain levels in the guild can withdraw as many tabs a day. But I mean, we're pretty much on the honor system. I don't expect Jerk to go in there and take out every good thing and replace it with cheap leather vests.
I didn't take anything. That was
feathers in there. You should take what you need. I mean, that's why it's there. We wouldn't put it in there unless it was up for grabs. So if you need something in there for your skill or
you see, but that's I think that's the other thing too is that I really don't know what I need. Like I'm only a level 14.
Yeah,
and I gotta now both. You know, obviously, you guys have some experience with hunters.
Yeah. So,
do I have to have a pet?
Yes,
you do. You know, the thing is, Jerk, what I was talking about with the pets, it's so complex. Like, my boyfriend's really been talking to me about it, and I've been helping him. You have to train your skills like up. You can't just keep one pet since the beginning of the game. Basically, I mean, you could, but you have to go out and train other like pets that are part of like whether it's a cat. Like if you're looking for like a growl, you've got to go train the next growl rank off a pet who has it. You got to go seek out that pet, train it, because you can train up to 3 things or hold up to 3 things. Then you have to teach your pet that next rank. You know what I mean? So you have to continually be training these new pets to get these new levels of, you know, dash and all these things you can teach your pets. You can't just go train that instantly because you don't know them. So it's really complex and it's actually quite interesting.
And you can get a kennel too if you want to hold on to a pet.
Well, actually, there's what are they called? There's where you keep horses. They're stables, and you can hold up to 3 pets in there.
I prefer to call it a kennel.
Okay, a kennel. So, I mean, Jerk, you should talk to my boyfriend. He can fill you in. He's all into his hunter now. He's played a mage and a paladin, and he thinks the hunter.
What level is his hunter?
65, I think.
Good lord.
Yeah. So,
well, Jerk, my hunter is a level 21. If you want to learn something.
Yes. No. Because I'm a level 14 and I've had this quest now for 4 mm-hmm. levels, you know,
right.
to get my. But I have no desire to get a pet.
You gotta get a pet.
You have to do a pet. Even if you're not gonna go beast mastery, which is the 3rd talent line, which would make your pet really strong. Even if you go marksman, you have to get a pet because it's basically gonna be your tank. I think maybe you should go that route then. It's just gonna be something that holds aggro for you because hunters shoot from a distance, and it's impossible for you to shoot from a distance if the character is gonna keep running at you. What you need is your pet to hold it back for you while you're shooting from a distance.
Right. And it's so fun, Kyle, because like I have a snake, and the snake is like attacking the beast, and I just sit back with my shotgun and just.
Well, basically,
snipe
Black Dog. That's why I told you to be a warlock because you can do that again with the Voidwalker. You know,
I can
you
get
cast
an imp already.
You do have an imp. You're right, but the Voidwalker is what you're going to get at level 10, and that's going to be your personal tank, and you can attack it from a distance, and that's going to hold what they call the aggro for you. So, Jerk, why don't you want a pet? Do you like killing things up close? Do you want to be a survival hunter, where you just hack and slash with it?
Well, no. It kind of plays to my ignorance in the game. You know,
okay.
Like. You know, because right now I'm specced, or I'm kind of specking towards a marksman hunter.
Okay, then you want a good tank pet who's going to hold your aggro because you're going to do all the damage. See, there's damage pets and there's tank pets, really. So you don't want a damage pet. You're going to want, like, you know, a turtle or something like that, or a boar.
A snake.
So that I can hold aggro.
You need the cobra Kyle.
And you're going to want to train it in these things that are going to make it a good tank. So you're going to want to train it in stamina. You're going to want to train it in armor. You're going to want to train it in tank things. You're going to want to definitely get it growl and all that stuff. You don't want to train it in any of the damage things. So what you, as a hunter, you've got these like points you can put into your pet. And you can redo your points. It maxes out at like 10 silver a day or something. So it's not that expensive. But, you know, you really got to keep in mind how you want to play the game and how you want to play your hunter. And it sounds like you want a good tank pet who's going to be able to take hits but not do much damage. And you're going to want to do the damage. So because you're going to be doing so much damage, as a hunter, you're usually doing front-end damage. You're going to want a pet who can hold that aggro for you. So it's good to know that going in, you know, because now you know what type of pet you want to look for and what type of things you want to train. And there's a lot of websites out there, you know, that will teach you the best place to get tank pets and the best place to train the tank, you know, stats that you want for your pet. So hunter is from what I've seen, one of the more complicated classes in the game, but I think it's the most rewarding.
I don't think it's complicated at all.
Well, Blackbeard, you never really...
You have to just keep going back to that trainer.
Huh? I know, but you can't keep the same pet. You can never keep going back to that
trainer. I'm on like my fourth pet.
I know.
And the pet I have now, I got it from an instance.
I know, but there are different levels of certain things that your pet can have, and you can never upgrade it unless you train a pet that has the next highest level for it. So I think it's a lot more complicated than you really realize.
No, like I said, I have my fourth pet now, Michelle, because I understand the concept.
Okay, good. But the thing is, Jerk, you really, I think it's a lot more of an it looks at first hand. I think the hunter, as compared to just being a mage or something in other classes I've tried, I think it is one of the more complicated ones. It doesn't mean it's hard to play. I think it's just something that, you know, you've got a lot more freedom and you've got a lot more control over your pet and what you want to do with it. So I think it's a very fun class to play from what I'm seeing, and I think that you should definitely keep up with it. But yes, you need a pet. And, you know, any advice you need, just ask him because he's all about it now. But you need a pet. That's the whole thing of being a hunter.
That's kind of what I thought. It was just, you know, like, because I knew I wasn't going toward beast mastery. And
yeah.
And you know what? I kind of realized that, you know, because I pulled out my strategy guide.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've realized that it's not very helpful.
Yeah.
This strategy guide, you know, even though there's some stuff at the beginning that talks about creating your character and everything and, you know,
yeah,
how you choose. That's very helpful. Once you get past that, it's like it's in a whole other language.
But read the chapters about the classes, though, because I learned a lot about my hunter by reading the strategy guide.
Yeah. You know? To say that the internet is better, though, from what I've seen comparing it to the book.
But you see, I kind of like having it like sitting beside me.
In your hand,
Stop. And I didn't find it very helpful because...
Kyle, I have a URL for you.
Okay, because I start reading the stuff about the hunter, and all it's doing is talking about training, and I'm like, okay, does this apply to me, or is it...
Because it's all about the training points for your pet and getting the next pet to get the training. That's what it really is, boils down to. It's hard for you to kind of be confused, exactly. But you just got to really keep in mind that you're going to be shooting things with a gun or an arrow or a crossbow, rather, or a regular bow. And you've got to shoot from a distance. That's where you're strongest. So you need a pet to keep it at you. But, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of good websites out there. If you want something to hold
you... I sent you a link. I bookmarked this a long time ago. It's a whole forum all about hunters.
Hunters, yeah.
I learned a lot on this link I just sent you.
I just bookmarked it.
Bookmark that and read it all.
Yeah. So I think I'm going to spend a bit more time playing World of Warcraft.
Well, that's cool. Hopefully Blackhawk can get on and catch up with you. You could.
Well, honestly, you know, I love my hunter the most, and I love my Tauren hunter the most, and I like... I'm sorry, but I like the Horde server better. I think the Alliance thing is a big poo-poo head thing.
Yeah, but, you know, I have to go back and I have to correct you with that whole thing you were arguing with me about your PvP server over there, how it was so hardcore. Go look up your stats on WoW 10-Ton Hammer. You're like 85-90% Horde over there. So that's really not true PvP when you've got all that going on. I'm not saying it's bad or anything, but I'm playing hardcore. I'm playing PvP. Okay, you're playing on a Horde server, basically.
Oh, no, I'm risking my life, Michelle, when I'm playing.
Whatever. With your 10% Alliance over there.
I am in danger on that server.
But, I mean, Kyle, like I say, anytime you need help, there are people on the guild and also myself. We're definitely there to help you or give you advice. And hopefully your hunter can get up there and get yourself a mount and start to experience the game because it opens up at every level, you know. It's such a...
Oh, yeah. And one of the things I'm really excited about is Winter Vale. Winter Vale is coming.
Oh, yeah. There's little events and stuff like that. The Dark Moon Fair is going on right now, I think. And
Winter Vale is like Christmas.
Yeah.
And that begins in like the next week or so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I'm really excited about it. It's going to be my first World of Warcraft holiday.
Very nice. You can buy a snowman.
Yeah, so I am really excited about that. And that's about it. And I am drinking Alexander Keith's Red Amber Ale.
Quite a long name. Alexander Keith.
All right, let's move on to the news.
Actually, Michelle, before we continue, I need to correct you. I need to correct you. I am on WarcraftRealms.com, and they have the Warcraft census here. And on Shadow Song, Michelle.
Okay.
71% are Alliance. That's 14,641
okay,
players.
Okay, but Shadow
wait,
Song.
Wait, just wait.
It's okay, five, John. Five. Shadow Song isn't a PvP.
Just wait,
who cares?
Wait,
but it's also,
second,
according
finish,
to Tent on Hammer, it's 50-50.
5,984 Horde. That means there's 10,000 more Alliance players.
Good.
And on Blackwing Lair.
More people to trade on my auction house.
It's 59% Horde. So you're incorrect with your.
That's
your,
according to the stats on one site. The other site said it was 80%.
It's 59% Horde. So
whatever.
You're actually on a server that is way more Alliance than anything.
Yeah, I like it that way because now I can go to the auction house and actually have good things to trade. When you go to the Horde side on the auction house, there's like nothing there.
Michelle,
it's
you
kind
were
of
at war.
Okay,
with the
good.
Horde,
I'm also trying to acquire goods off the auction house, so more Alliance
game,
is a good thing
sounds like
for me.
To me.
Okay, this coming from somebody who has a human warlock, they said they want to play. You really shouldn't play something when you're at war.
Well, you're the one telling me that I'm on a baby server. Right?
I didn't say you're on a baby server. I just said that a lot of these PvP servers are more outweighed to one side, which, you know, very few of them are 50-50 down the line. So, you know, it's kind of an unbalanced war. It's like being Sweden and attacking America.
Well,
it's
you know, we outnumber the Nazis. I don't know what to say about that.
Okay, can we continue now? Because we were Kyle and I were talking, and we were interrupted by John. Can we just start the show? And the first thing out of his mouth, I have to correct him just now.
Well, that's why I wanted to start the show, because you said it was 90% to 10% Horde.
All right,
actually,
can we continue with the news, Kyle, before
incorrect.
John has his little rampage?
So anyways, we kind of talked about this last week, but now this has kind of come to light. Nintendo is pulling advertising in the wake of Wii shortages.
That's crazy. A little reversal here.
Apparently, Nintendo plans to remove some of its advertising and put it into 2008 because they don't have enough Wiis and people are getting angry.
Wow.
I don't think I've ever heard of that in the history of anything, somebody pulling advertising, you know, because it was doing too well. I don't know. That's kind of crazy.
Well, I mean, it's why spend millions of dollars advertising something that you can't sell? You know, so I think it makes complete sense.
And when you think about it, if you remember last week, we were talking about the mild sales of Mario Galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
I said, aren't there more ads? Well, this kind of makes sense, you know, and this it kind of ties into this because there aren't any consoles, which we talked about before. There's nothing more frustrating than you know people see a commercial for something on TV. They want to be able to go out to the store and pick it up.
Right.
And if they can't, there's really no point in having those commercials.
Right.
I read somewhere that Reggie had said, geez, you know, yeah, we made a mistake by not having, you know, we really underestimated the demand for this Christmas.
Yeah, underestimated. Okay. Well, hopefully it'll fit. I feel bad for people, you know.
Well,
like you say,
I mean, their monthly production rate's like 1 million pieces, though, which is a lot. I mean, to be able to make something like that, 1 million of anything is insane.
You've got to figure, though, that after a year...
Just trust me when I say this. 1 million is insane. It's insane. To be able to even make 1 million a month is crazy.
Well, it's just like four pieces of Lego. I don't think so.
And
an old game stuck together.
No, it's far.
Okay, I'm on. To correct John, I'm on the WoW 10-10 Hammer site, and I'm reading right off Blackwing Lair. It's 87.3% Horde, 12.7%
Well, the
Alliance.
One I'm looking at is 59%.
Uh-huh.
Well, I'm at WarcraftRealms.com, Michelle.
Okay.
You know what?
Sorry.
you guys need to get past this, and you need to make up. And I think you know what might be a nice gesture.
What's that?
Is both of you to give each other the gift of a virtual console game? Which?
Oh.
Like that?
That was good, Kyle.
Segue, which is a feature that's now available in North America. So you can now go into your whatever those goofy channels on your Wii, and you can give someone the gift of a virtual console game.
That's nice,
I guess.
But you can only do it to people that obviously you've traded friends codes with, and they have to be in your country. So you guys wouldn't be able to send one to me.
What do you think of this?
Darn Canadians. I don't know. I think it's why complain about features that you don't have to use.
Yeah, but what do you think of the idea of like gift? I mean, like you know, it's like my nephew. I'm going to give him this for his birthday. You know, go check out your Wii. You got something.
Oh, that's cool.
You know, I think, you know what? I think it is kind of cool.
Yeah.
You know, you're spending $5-$10. You know, you want your nephew exposed. You know, maybe he's never played Super Mario 2. Buy him Super Mario 2.
Yeah. Is there like a card, a gift card you could fill out?
I have no idea how it works. I'm surprised you haven't tried it yet, John.
I have not tried it yet. Who would I send stuff to? People I don't even know in real life? Just send them a game for the hell of it?
You could send you could send Michelle a Zelda game.
Here you go, there Rob you go. Turbo. I bought you Gunstar Heroes. Enjoy.
So, did you guys watch the VGA Spike Video Game Awards?
I did not.
But I read about them.
Yeah. So, they gave out some awards. Maybe we'll go through just some of like the top ones here. Game of the Year, BioShock.
Woo.
Best Shooter,
nice.
Call of Duty 4.
Woo.
Best Action Game, Super Mario.
Woo.
Best Rhythm Game, Rock Band. Best Woo. RPG, Mass Effect. Then you start getting into some goofy ones.
Yeah.
You know, like they've got best military game. You know.
That's a big crosses over a lot of things. Yeah.
Hey, World in Conflict's on there.
It is.
But what about best driving game? Is Dirt really the best driving game? I was surprised to see that.
So was I. So here's the probably one of what people have considered the biggest surprise.
Yeah.
Best graphics.
Biggest surprise of the evening.
Yeah.
Halo. Doesn't win Game of the Year. Doesn't win Best Shooter.
It does win Best Multiplayer, though.
It does win Best Multiplayer.
As voted by community.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And
not
that,
by
and,
the judges.
And here right. was the thing.
That's the gotcha.
The two awards that it won were actually voted on by other, you know, like, by the community and not given out by, like,
by critics. The critics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, actually, it won two awards, and one of them was a fake award.
Oh, most addictive game fueled by Dew.
Right, that was an advertiser sponsored made up award. Well, yeah. What was the other award it won besides multiplayer?
Most addict. Oh, wait.
Most addictive game fueled by Dew.
Yeah,
that was it. Best multiplayer and most addictive game fueled by Dew. Those are the two games.
So
the
it really won one award. The other one doesn't count because that was a sponsored award.
Well, yeah, the game that didn't have its own Mountain Dew can wasn't going to beat out Team Fortress mm-hmm. 2.
So what game won Game of the Year then we didn't tell people?
We did. BioShock.
BioShock, okay.
So Halo 3, the only award it won was voted on by the community, not by the critics. The critics completely ignored the game.
Yeah, that's right.
Right.
Yeah.
Good. I think that all these picks are right on the money. If you ask me.
Yeah. What about the best graphics? How come we don't see, like, I don't know, some other games that maybe we would think would be there? Like
Crysis.
Crysis. I think everyone knew was the best graphics going in.
Yeah.
But I was surprised there's no PS3 games on there.
Like, yeah. Where's your Heavenly Sword? Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. But so and it's interesting to note that out of all of you know. Excluding best PS3 game, best Wii game,
all the Xbox One, everything.
You know, best PC game. There are like there's only like three categories that three games that won awards that aren't available on the 360.
Right.
Phantom Hourglass won best handheld.
Best PS3 game obviously was a PS3 game.
Well, that's what I said.
Best yeah. Wii game was. Wii
I should
game.
Exclude that.
So really, the only game that won something that the 360 could have won was best action game, right?
Yeah. Well, and best graphics.
Right.
But yeah, the best action game went to Super Mario.
Yeah.
So, did you guys hear about the awards? The actual awards?
No.
I heard about the stupid thing about the.
And you know,
there's no envelopes, and
yeah, and you know what? It embarrasses me, but I'm going to mention it, and I want to see what Michelle thinks. Instead of envelopes,
okay,
the actual winners were announced by having naked women walk out on stage that were body painted with the winner's name.
You know, it's just typical of what they're how they're trying to dumb down the gaming market of like teenage boys. You know what
but
I mean?
It is
and
a
get attention.
Channel though, isn't that
exactly?
Shtick,
but
it's a guy's channel.
Yeah, but I mean that's it's inappropriate because it's talking about video games and you're going to draw in kids anyway. And I just think I think that's stupid.
It is stupid.
This is pathetic, but you know.
And yeah. I thought Spike was trying to get away from some of that, like because originally
yeah.
it was called
it's like
Men
watching
TV.
Jerry Springer or something. It's like
Spike used to be Men TV, and then they said, okay, let's change to Spike and let's get some actual shows on. And they had CSI and stuff. When I heard this, I was, oh my god, this is just.
That's stupid.
Right. But, yeah, you know, there's some merit, though, to the winners, though, because they were chosen by all of the magazines and websites that are worth talking about, you know?
I'm not discrediting the actual, like, the choices that they made.
Right.
I'm just saying that the presentation, just naked women, you know,
it's a
body
little lowbrow.
it kind of brings it down, you know? Multiple notches.
Agreed.
So,
but I would say overall, the 360 is the winner here.
Yeah, if it's not broken.
But the thing is, though, like winner best sports game Madden, that's available on all consoles. You know, Simpsons game, that's available on all consoles. Rock Band, that's available on all consoles. Orange Box, all consoles.
I didn't say that they were only 360 games. I said that aside from they were available on the 360.
Yeah, Dirt. All consoles, Call of Duty.
All consoles.
So really, the only exclusive was BioShock and Mass Effect.
Mm-hmm. And Halo, because you're not going to have anything else in best multiplayer. That's obvious.
And BioShock was winner of the year.
Yeah.
Game of the
yep.
So I think now, because I think, you know, the people are getting anxious enough.
Yeah.
They're rubbing their hands together with anticipation.
Uh-huh.
I think it's time for us to play that interview that we did with Ed Freeze from, oh my god, I can't remember.
From everything, from Fingerprints, from...
Fingerprints, that's right, from Fingerprints.com and a whole bunch of other...
really neat and cool things.
Yes.
That you've all used. He invented the internet.
He did.
Here's Ed Freeze.
Today in the virtual VGO studios, we have a very special guest, a legend in the computing world, a legend in the gaming world, and now soon to be a legend in the collectible miniature figurine world. The CEO of Figureprints.com, the new service that allows World of Warcraft users the ability to get one-of-a-kind detailed collectible figurines of their personal World of Warcraft tune and avatar right down to their armor, weapons, name, etc. With us is Mr. Ed Freeze.
Woohoo!
That's quite the introduction, Kyle.
That is a heck of an introduction. Wow.
I feel a little winded.
Is it okay I laughed in the middle when you called me the legend?
No, you must be quiet.
Yeah, you are tolerate legend. No laughing.
All right, whatever.
Well, Ed, welcome to the show. Obviously, we're very excited to talk to you about your new service, which launched today. But first, mm-hmm. you know, for our listeners that don't know who you are, those listeners that have been living under a rock, can you tell us a little bit about your amazing history and just tell us a little about your background? Who is Ed Freeze?
Who am I really?
Who are you?
I don't know.
I don't know.
How am I doing on this podcast? Am I doing good so far?
You're doing good. You're impressing.
Thank you. No, I've always been into video games, I guess, as long as there have been video games. I mean, when I was a kid growing up, the first games started to come out, and I was learning how to program. The first PCs were coming out. I was just in high school, and Apple IIs and Atari 800s and... one Christmas I got an Atari 800, so I taught myself to program and started typing in games out of magazines in BASIC.
Antic?
Yeah, absolutely. Antic and creative computing. The good old days.
Yes.
And taught myself to program first in BASIC, then assembly language, and started writing games. And I did kind of a Frogger clone and was approached by a company who wanted to publish it. Somehow they attracted back to me. It just had my name on it. Eddie Freeze, actually.
Eddie.
Yeah, I know. I don't go by that anymore. No. So you guys can't call me that.
We won't call you that anymore. All right.
Yeah. Steve Ballmer calls me Eddie, but that's... anyway, so wrote some games for the Atari 800. They were all assembly language, ROM cartridge games, and taught myself, you know, and basically when it. No, you would never know them.
Really?
Because yeah, I was never know. I mean, I could tell you there. The first one was basically it was the. We got to have a lot of time for me to tell you this. But, all right, you can cut this all out, right? But the first game, I told you I made a Frogger clone, and this company contacted me, and they said they wanted to, you know, turn it into something they could sell, but they said we'd be sued if we just, because it looked just like the arcade game. So they had this idea, we'll make it like Princess and the Frog.
Oh. Okay.
So, you know, so the idea was to get across, you know, so you could kiss the princess. Okay, and then turn into a prince. But, you know, I mean, I only had 8 bits to deal with. I mean, you know, so I didn't have a lot of things. I couldn't make a whole princess, so I just did the lips.
You know? The lips? What?
Well, that's better of another part. It could have been.
Lips?
Yeah, so you were kind of like this frog. You had to jump across. Oh, and of course the cars turned into jousting knights. Right? it was, but the frog was still a frog. I mean, if you're going to sue somebody over Frogger, I think the frog is the thing you'd want to change. But, but you know, we were small enough, we got away with it, I think. But anyway, so that was the first one. Then I did kind of a take on Dig Dug called Anteater, and then an original game in quotes called Sea Chase. Anyway, the entire video game industry kind of blew up around 1982, 83. Historians of the game business know it well, but a lot of people today have forgotten about it. Atari went away, and anyway, I was just in college at that time, and I was doing this to help pay for college, and so that went away. I kind of got serious, got my computer science degree. I worked in the school, helping to run the computers for the school, and then during the summers, I'd come back to Seattle and I'd look for programming work. And between my junior and senior year in college, I got hired by a little company called Microsoft. Make a long story short, I graduated from college and joined Microsoft. I was one of 7 programmers who did the first version of Excel for Windows. So I worked on Excel for 5 years, became the lead programmer of Excel. Then I switched over to run Word. I was the manager of Word for another 5 years. I'd been doing office stuff for 10 years, and, you know, I love to program, and, you know, I just kind of kept finding myself managing more and more and more people and programming less and less. And, you know, at some point I'm kind of like, well, if I'm going to be a manager, you know, I should be a manager of something that I enjoy.
Right.
I mean, I didn't have anything against Excel or Word, but, you know, in my spare time I was playing all the latest video games, and, you know, so there was a small group at Microsoft doing games, mostly Flight Simulator and a few other things. And I met with them, and it turned out the timing was really good. They were just in the process of kicking out their manager, and they needed a new one. And I decided I was going to go over, switch jobs, and take over this group. And of course, all these executives who I'd never even seen at the company wanted to meet with me and tell me I was committing career suicide. And why would you leave office, one of the most important products of the whole company, to go work on games?
Yeah.
We don't care about games. No one cares about games. You know, but it's actually really nice to work on something that other people don't care about in a big company, because they kind of ignore you. You know?
Yeah.
You're like in a vacuum.
Yeah. So it was great. I went over there. You know, I swear, I took this job. All these people told me, don't do it. Don't. You're crazy. Don't take this job. I ignored them all. I took the job. And 2 weeks later, I'm in Tokyo, and I had just spent all day meeting with, you know, my heroes from the game business and seeing all these things that had, you know, before they came out, you know, I saw the first Resident Evil like a year before it was coming out, and just all this stuff. I just remember vividly walking down the street in Tokyo and thinking, you know, this job rocks, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it had been kind of stressful because all these people told me I was making a mistake, but at that moment I knew I did the right thing. So
yeah.
Anyway, so I just started building up the games group and growing it, and we signed up Age of Empires, and that came out, was a big hit for us. And, you know, when people weren't looking, I'd, you know, find more money and just suck into my group and do more projects, and grew the PC business quite a bit. And then then Xbox came along. Some crazy guys wanted to do this console, and it was actually like the third or fourth time I'd been approached by a group within Microsoft who wanted to do a console, but these guys actually got it. You know, they were like people from with some game experience, and they knew they had a good plan. So anyway, I threw whatever weight I had behind them, and some other people got involved, and you know, that's what ended up becoming the Xbox. And so all of a sudden, I was doing not just PC but console, and then I became responsible for the third party stuff for Xbox, not just the first party stuff. And anyway, and it was just like a whirlwind. The group grew to 1,200 people, and it was really fun and flew all over the world and did lots of big stuff on Xbox. And, you know, and at that point, I'd been at the company 18 years, and, you know, I was just starting my family at home, and I looked at my lifestyle, spending all my time on the road, and, you know, and it just, we were about to do the new version, Xbox 360. I'm like, I don't want to do this for five more years.
Yeah.
No. So I left the company, just before I turned 40, and, maybe it was a midlife crisis. I don't know. Yeah, and I just started, I sort of retired. But, you know, I immediately started getting sucked back into the game business. And I started being on, invited to join some boards of companies. And that was fun for me because I'd never seen that side of a company before, you know, starting up with venture capitalists and that kind of thing. So I started joining some boards. People approached me who were starting new game companies or wanted my help starting game companies. So I helped some people start game companies. And, you know, and every day I was doing lots of different things, working with lots of different companies. And that was really fun for me instead of being part of this one giant thing, you know.
Right.
And I did that for several years, and I continue to do it today. I really enjoy it, but it was a little weird to always be helping other people and not doing anything myself. You know what I mean?
Yeah. After all those years, yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and I don't know. I guess I almost started to feel kind of like a fraud, like I'm giving people advice on how to start a company, but I haven't done it. You know what I mean? So, and one day, well, it's kind of hard. I have to sort of – there's two overlapping stories here, so I'm not sure how to tell it. But basically what happened was I had the idea for Fingerprints. Mm-hmm. And I can go back and explain how I had the idea. But I had the idea, and I was just kind of sitting on it for about a month and not knowing what to do about it. And then I went out to lunch with another guy who had just quit his job and was looking to start something new. And he wanted to start this new thing in the games business, and he had this great idea. And I was sitting there giving him advice, and I'm thinking – Why am I not doing my idea?
Right.
He's somebody I've worked with a lot in the past. His name's John Grandy, and he's starting a new company called Etherplay. But anyway, I got up the courage to tell John my idea, which was this Fingerprints thing, and he was real supportive, and he said, well, he'd help me with my idea, and I'd help him with his, and so that was kind of the start of the company. So to go back and say how I had the idea, I was at E3 a year and a half ago, and I was visiting EA, and they let me go behind closed doors and see the Spore creature editor that lets you make the little creatures in Spore, which was cool. When I went in to see it, they had this glass case, and in it they had a bunch of these, what I now know were 3D prints. And, I asked him about them because I knew about 3D printing, but I'd never seen color 3D prints before. And they said, yeah, these are 3D prints. So that's amazing. Will you send me a print of the character I create? And they said, sure, we'll do that for you. So a month or two later, a package showed up at my house, and I opened it up, and there was a little creature. And I'm staring at him right now. It's really goofy looking because I'm not an artist, but it's like this kind of spherical fish-like thing with these giant fins on the side, big eye in the middle. He's bright green, but if you looked at him, his fins are really thin. The points of them are sharp, and the detail is really fine. And I looked at this thing. I was like, wow, that is amazing that a printer can make this thing, and it's full color too. Anyway, I set it next to my desk, and I was playing a lot of World of Warcraft then. I still play too much World of Warcraft.
Yeah, I hear you.
But, so it's sitting on my desk, and I'm playing World of Warcraft, and I'm sitting on my desk, and you know, it took like a month because I'm pretty slow, but, you know, it took like a month for me to
put
the two together and go, whoa, you know, maybe you could do this for World of Warcraft. So that was like the idea. And then, like I said, I sat on it probably another month before I got up the courage to like pursue it. And, you know, that all happened about a year ago. And, you know, once I decided I was going to do it, I called up Mike Morheim at Blizzard and, you know, talked to him about the idea and asked if he had, if the licensing rights were still available, and they were. And he was excited about it and encouraged me to go forward with it. And so I started building the team to make it happen. And, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the thing I'm really excited about. And that's what, I mean, we're all playing WoW here, but I'm the one who's most crazy about it. I have two level 70 characters, and I would always go on the internet searching for, like, a warlock, and it just didn't look like mine. It was undead, and I'm human, and, you know, when I heard about this, I was so excited. I went rushing to the site, and I was like, okay, you know, the 11th, and I went today, and it's like, you got to enter a drawing, and I was like, no, what can I do? I have to get my hands on one of these things. I'm just like, I can feel the frenzy that probably everybody feels. It's just like, you want your own personalized character. It's just such a genius idea, and I'm excited that it's getting done on the game that I play the most of, so it's like perfect, you know. I couldn't ask for it better.
So I know how you feel. I mean, I play a gnome rogue, and you know, who wants to make, you know, who's going to make a statue of a gnome rogue?
Exactly. You want to have your weapon and the outfit you crafted. So the fact that you can go through. Yeah, I mean, this is connected.
I need my Deathblow goggles. I need
You do. Your engineering took a long time to get those done. Now, this is linked right into the armory, right? You should tell us a little bit about that. It's going to have, like, every little detail.
Exactly right. So we go right into the armory, and we pull all the details of your character right out. In fact, we have special access to the armory that gives us information that's not publicly available. So we get all the information about your character itself, what kind of hair, you know, what skin color, you know, facial features, that kind of thing.
Oh, good.
So, so we can automatically pull up an exact replica of your character.
So Ed, and, sorry, go ahead. I was gonna say, so you download this mesh or 3D model from them, and then what happens? What is like the whole process? You know, is it done here? Is it done in overseas? Is how much handwork is there? Is it all this 3D rapid prototype machine, or what's involved?
Sure, I can walk you all through it. As a start, you know, I started with the WoW model viewer, which is an open source piece of code that's been out there for a while. It was created by fans, and it goes into the World of Warcraft installation on your machine and pulls the 3D models right out of it. Mm-hmm. Okay, and so I was able to take that and start to modify it for what we needed. And so if you combine that with the data from the armory, you can produce you know, a 3D replica of your character.
Okay.
So basically we have a special version of the WoW model viewer that I've created that does what we need. And then we export it into a 3D graphic format. And the first ones we printed, by the way, we just did that. We just exported them and we sent them straight to the printer. And we were all, you know, thinking, okay, this is going to be cool. And we got back just garbage. You know, some of what we did actually was okay.
Right.
Sort of. And some of it was, you know, like the Mecha Strider, they didn't even send me the people. You know, they're like, it didn't make it out of the printer. It was all I heard, you know?
Yeah.
And slowly it began to, you know, dawn on me that there was more to this than just, you know, sending this model to the printer. And that's when I brought on a 3D artist who I'd worked with for a long time, a guy named Rick Welsh.
Mm-hmm.
And he comes from a CAD-CAM background. He had worked in stereolithography back in the old days and worked on Flight Simulator for me and other stuff at Microsoft. And he immediately understood what a lot of the problems were, that the models needed to be what's called airtight, that the printer gets confused. It needs to know whether it's outside or inside an object. Basically, it needs to know whether it's solid, whether to make something solid or not. And that restriction doesn't exist for characters in the game. You know, there was no reason for Blizzard to worry about that because it was just something drawn. You know, they never thought it would be printed. So, another example of the kinds of problems we have to deal with is, you know, like the capes that you wear. They're infinitely thin.
Right.
And, so you try and print that, and guess what? You know, it doesn't work. I mean, and they have no thickness to them. So they have to be extruded. They have to give them a thickness. Hair is a whole other problem. It has to do with transparency and textures. And anyway, I could go on and on. We smooth them. We have to take all the texture maps and do all this stuff too. Anyway, bottom line is there's now a 10,000 line script, that 3D Studio Max script that takes the output from my version of the model viewer, and then does all these automatic massages to the character to make them printable. So that part is all automated, sort of in quotes. Mm-hmm. And then the next part of the process is, before it gets sent to the printer, we have a live 3D artist who looks at it. And at that point, they'll make whatever tweaks they need to make to make it, you know, just so that a human's involved in the process, right? They might reposition a foot or twist a weapon so it looks a little better, or like when your staff is floating on your back, it's actually just floating in the air; it's not touching anything. So if we printed it like that, it would just fall.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
Quality control.
Yeah. So a 3D artist looks at it, does it whatever tweaks are necessary, and then the resulting 3D data is sent up to our print facility, and that's in Vancouver, Canada. That's where I involved another friend of mine. He's run a big printing business up in Canada for years. He mostly, mm-hmm. in the past, has printed like big banners and signs. They wrap buses and stuff like that. Anyway, it really helped to bring somebody on board who knows how to run a big printing operation and how to have printers and hire people to run them and all that stuff, which none of which I really wanted to worry about. Mm-hmm. So the electronic data goes up to Canada, goes to the print shop. There we have a bank of these 3D printers, and I can talk about how the printers themselves work. But basically, then it gets printed, and once it's done, I'll come back and fill in that part. And once it's printed, and the other stuff I'm going to tell you in a minute, then they're basically ready. They're glued to a base, put a glass dome goes over top of them, and then they get shipped straight to your house. So
amazing.
So
there's no actual painting. It's printing all the colors and everything all at once.
Yeah, so let me talk about that.
That is wild.
This printer is really amazing. So it uses it's basically, at its heart, it's an inkjet printer. In fact, it uses HP 11 inkjet print heads. It uses standard inkjet print heads, although the ink that comes out of them is more of a kind of a glue mixed with ink. But basically what it does, you got to imagine this platform, and a spreader comes and it spreads a really thin layer of this white powder. This powder's kind of the consistency of flour. Mm-hmm. And this spreader bar comes and it spreads a really thin layer, almost like a sheet of paper. And then the print heads come out and they draw one very thin slice of your model into that plaster, and the ink hits it, and then it soaks right in. Okay, and it starts to harden. It reacts with the plaster, and it starts to harden. And then that platform that's on goes down one notch, mm-hmm. 1/250th of an inch, and then the spreader bar comes across again, spreads another super thin layer of this plaster, and then the print heads come out. They print another slice, and so basically, slice by slice by slice, it builds up your model.
Wow.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting because I was so confused about how you guys pulled this off, and now I can visually see it, and that's crazy.
So what you have to imagine is at the end, that platform's all the way down, and this whole mm-hmm. bay is just full of this white powder. And so you look at it, and it just all you see is like this thing full of flour. And then you have to dig down into it, and you basically vacuum the stuff away or blow it away with a little mm-hmm. airbrush. And that's all has to be done by hand. And what you find is, it's like archaeology. You uncover this thing, and all of a sudden, it's like there's this wow character starts to appear. And we actually have a video of that process, and we haven't put it up on our website yet.
Yeah.
I need to get it up there because it's cool to see. But anyway, you excavate this thing out, and you pull it out. And when it first comes out, there's a couple things. One, it looks really pale. It's very white. Because it still has some of that powder on it, and just the colors haven't really come out yet. But also, it's super fragile, so we have to be really careful with them when we remove them. And
we're desperately trying to carefully get them out of the printer, and then they go into this glue bath, and they soak in glue. And once that glue soaks into them, it does a couple things. One, when it hardens, it makes them very strong, but it also really brings out the color, makes them look really bright. So that's the part I left out before. So they get printed, then they get dunked in this glue, and then they're ready to go, and they look beautiful.
Amazing.
Wow. Yeah.
It is amazing. I mean, I'm still amazed. Yeah. Just to see this thing on the screen and then to be holding it in your hand. It's
exactly.
Because
I've never owned a figurine in my life, and I never really had an interest to. The only thing that would push me to want one is if it was my personalized character. You know what I mean? So I think this is going to open up the market to people like myself who really don't care about figurines, but care more about the fact that it's your character coming to life. So
can you make a figurine of me?
Yeah, seriously. That would be fun.
I need the 3D model of you. It's
right.
Nice.
3DS?
Nice. Maybe they'll be for hunters and warlocks in the future. You'll be able to include your pet or your demon or something. That'll be a little more realistic.
Today we've had mail from two different couples who are getting married.
Wedding cake topper?
Oh, no.
Exactly right. In fact, I'm staring at one right now because we rushed one through for one of them.
Aww.
And I'm looking at this night elf bride on my screen where my wife's holding her wildflowers.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
For the people that are listening right now that are completely salivating over this, what does it cost and what do they have to do to get one of these in their hands?
Well, it costs $99.95, there's a $15 shipping and handling charge on top of that. It's basically shipping to anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. I wish that was all.
Yeah, so do I.
the problem is we can only handle so many prints, and the other problem is we, if you want to call it a problem, we pre-sold a bunch of our inventory to Dell as part of this World of Warcraft laptop that they're putting out.
Yes,
so, we talked about that last week.
The golden ticket.
Yeah. So we don't know how many of those laptops are going to sell, and every one of those sells with the right to get one of our figures.
Oh, yeah.
So the drawing mechanism lets us know, in a week and a half, it's a week from Friday, we'll have a much better idea how many Dell orders we're going to have. Then we'll know how many orders we can take off the website. And we just thought the fairest way is to is just to randomly allocate those among people who are interested in. You know, I'm not a big fan of DKP in the game, so I figured the random loot roll is the way to go.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what's like the daily production rate for these? If you care to share.
Part of it is we're new at it, so there's the theoretical number.
You got to ramp up.
and it's more about ramping up our ability to, get these things out without breaking them, and learning, about, because different classes or different races are different. Obviously, some are pretty easy to print, some are pretty tricky, and you got all the different kinds of weapons. So, we've been doing a couple beta tests. My guild got to be our last big guinea pig beta test.
Oh, that's nice.
So we did 40 figures for that group, and we learned a lot from that. But now this is the next big step up for us. The printers are slow. I mean, I told you they're printing one 250th of an inch at a time.
Yeah.
So it takes about an hour per vertical inch to print.
Wow.
Yeah. And now we can print more than one at a time.
Right.
Within that bay. So that helps. But still, we got to keep our printers running, around the clock. And we have a bunch of these printers lined up in a row. But still, I mean, the demand is, it seems like we're going to have a lot of people who want these. So.
Yeah, I think so. Just from the word on the street is I think you guys will be busy for a while. But, I mean, in the future, do you ever foresee opening this up to other games or other franchises or anything like that? Or do you feel kind of comfortable just sticking with Warcraft?
Yeah, it's funny. I get that question, but it seems like people ask it right about now when I've done explaining that we can't deal with what we have.
Yes, exactly.
And then
that's why I'm kind
of
like...
other stuff, too. Yeah, I mean, Blizzard's been a great partner for us to work with. They've been really helpful from the very start, and So and I kind of feel like we started at the top. You know, I feel like there are other games out there, but it's like this is like the biggest game in the world, and it's also one, you know, personally really passionate about it. I have 70 days in my gnome, you know. So, you know, we're gonna be dedicated to Warcraft for a while. You know, because I'm in the game business, I know a lot of people, and you know, I've had conversations with other people, and I'm sure I'll continue to have them. But for now, it looks like Blizzard's gonna keep us pretty busy.
Well, that's good news to me, actually, because I wanted you guys to stay focused on that, so you know, people would have a chance to get one. So. Glad to hear it.
Good, good.
So before we let you go, we have to ask you one question that's not necessarily about the figure prints, but it's about video games. And, you know, right now we're into the second year of, you know, next-gen consoles, and you obviously have stepped back from it, but I'm sure you're still, you know, have an interest in them. What do you think of the three consoles that are out right now?
Yeah, it's a really interesting battle, I think. Still, it's hard to say what's going to happen. You know, I think Microsoft helped themselves by getting out a year early. But I think the 360 is a little bland. I mean, the best things about it are kind of the online service, what they've done with that.
Yeah.
It doesn't have the kind of innovation that you see in the Wii, say.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have the HD DVD capability that you see in the PS3. So, you know, they kind of got that head start. Now, you know, Wii is weird because, well, it has that, you know, really cool controller. They've been doing well with the first party software, but developers really don't like that machine very much. Because they want to be doing the next gen stuff, you know?
Yes.
You know, it's basically, it's, you know, it's sort of a souped up GameCube is what it is from an internal point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got Sony, and you know, Sony's getting their act together. You know, they've finally cut the price, which they needed to do a long time ago, and their sales are really starting to pick up. They're starting to get some good software out there. And so, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. I mean, on the one hand, I sort of see Microsoft getting pinched in between the Sony because their brand is still so strong. PlayStation brand is still so strong, and they're finally getting their pricing and gaming right. That's going to put pressure. And then, you know, they're squeezed between that on the high end and the Wii on the low end. And so that may hurt them to some degree. But at the same time, if Microsoft can cut price, and you know, Nintendo's already pretty low, and if they can keep cutting price, they can really put pricing pressure on Sony. And I think that's something that's going to make Sony's life hard. So, I guess that's sort of my way of weaseling out of it.
So, do you have all the consoles, or are you one game?
You know, I actually don't have a PS3 right now, which I probably shouldn't admit, but. that's the one I don't have, and you know, I'm playing a lot of Mario Galaxy. I have kids, I have boys 3 and 5,
uh-huh.
and Mario Galaxy is a big hit around our house, so
yeah,
we're playing a lot
too.
of. And of course, I've had a 360 for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I've had a bunch of them. Let's see.
Four.
But I should be careful what I say about my friends.
Well, Ed, you know, thanks for coming on our little show. You know, it's an honor to have you on here. You're
definitely
a legend. Any Excel Easter eggs or anything you want to share with us?
Oh, stop it, John.
there are Easter eggs in all of them, yeah. But you don't really want me to talk about that.
So anyway, if our listeners want to get one of their own figures, they can go to your website, which is figureprints.com, right? And they can sign up and get in the lottery.
Exactly. They should definitely go, you know, between now and next Friday. Sign up, and then they're sure to get in the drawing, and that'll give them the best chance to become one of our first customers.
Excellent. Well, Ed, thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yep,
had a good time.
All right, so it's time to do From the Boards, and as I mentioned,
a little sad
because last week we threw out,
it was Kyle's idea, not ours, by the way.
That's right. I wanted to see pictures and videos of people rocking out playing Guitar Hero and Rock Band.
He's got a sick fetish, and you guys didn't fulfill it.
No one fulfilled it.
And here's the thing, is that I was all, because someone said, oh, jerk, you got to post something first. And I was all ready to do it. But of course, 360 broke, and I wanted to see pictures and videos, people actually playing, not posing and stuff.
Yeah.
I thought it would be interesting to see how people play.
Instead, people posted pictures of other people playing.
Yes. So you've got another week. We're going to give away something.
What, Kyle? Maybe that's the problem. We haven't defined, or rather, you haven't defined, what it is we're giving away.
Well, because I wasn't planning on giving anything away until you guys said, let's give something away.
Who said that?
You and Michelle.
Maybe because we both realized it was such a bad idea when you first announced it that we had to give something away.
Well, you know what? We'll give away like a t-shirt or something.
We will give a t-shirt away.
Okay, so you got another week. So all you need to do is when you're playing Rock Band or Guitar Hero, get your wife or significant other or son or daughter or neighbor.
If you're a lonely person, set up your camera on a timer.
Or have your neighbors come over and take a photo of you. Uh-huh. Something like that.
Playing and rocking out. Get a free t-shirt. This is fun. Share with the community. You got another week to do this. So let's go to the forums, thegamingoutsiders.com. Go to the From the Board section. Try it out. All right, one listener mail. This comes from Matt Taylor. He says, with large and expensive peripheral games becoming more popular with Rock Band and the Guitar Hero series, do you think that Capcom will come out with a Steel Battalion 2?
Now, first off, I want to point out here that Matthew Taylor emailed us, IGN, an IGN podcast. Did you notice that?
Oh, yeah, he did. He held us all together.
He took like a shotgun approach on this question.
Yeah, he did. But you know what? We're probably the only people that are going to answer. So here we go.
No, that they're not going to do it.
Obviously, Rock Band and Guitar Hero are different games than Steel Battalion.
A little more mass market, I would say.
Because
big robotic tank thing. Mech.
Yeah, because Steel Battalion, essentially, it's a game for you. You know, if you really love mech games and you want to sit down and pretend you're inside a mech cockpit, hey, it's well worth the $200. Rock Band and Guitar Hero, they're popular because they're more like party games.
Right, and everybody wants to be a rock star. Everybody does not want to be a mech pilot.
That's right. and people can kind of relate to saying, okay, here's a controller that looks like a guitar or a drum kit, or they understand what a microphone is. They're not going to get the joystick with the second throttle button and the little toggle switch to, you know, self-destruct. It's just not worth it for me.
Maybe it's an untapped market, Kyle.
I do have to admit, it always looked cool. I would go into the Toys R Us and see it there, and
mm-hmm.
it looked kind of fun. But you would have to really be into these games,
right?
Yeah,
you know, to justify doing, you know, playing it just for one game. Plus, it looked awkward. I couldn't do it. They had a control like that for Ace Combat, but you know, I can't see people buying it.
Michelle, you should get that Steel Battalion.
Oh, shut up!
You should. Yeah, you can mess it in.
Yes, just put it off on Michelle.
Uh-huh. That would fit in with your little Chuck E. Cheese thing you got going on.
Whatever. I don't need anything else. The living room's already a mess.
You got your race chair, Rock Band.
Guitar here, three guitars.
You know what? You need to have some sort of machine that converts change into tokens.
Right.
Yeah, I should have the neighbors come over and just charge their kids.
Oh, I'm sorry. We don't take quarters. It's only tokens.
No.
Michelle, have you been playing Rock Band?
I have a little bit, but not as much as I thought I would be.
Me too. I'm a little scared about it, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm worried. God. You know,
I'm very worried.
It died out quicker than Guitar Hero did for some reason.
It's because of the commitment to play the damn thing.
Yeah, I think it is.
You got to set it up.
You got to leave it set up?
I got to pull it out a little.
I think that's the thing. It's like, okay, you can't just plug it in. It's like, okay, I want to play this game. All right, let's move the furniture around.
Get the USB hub out. And
exactly. There's
things.
A lot involved, you know, to just play the game.
Yeah, there is. Well, we should talk about community, as we were before, the virtual or the community gamer tag that we have. It's VGO community, right? And you can send a message to it to see the whole Friends of Friends things on Xbox Live, because we never formally announced that.
Well, that's because last week in the 360 update they included Friends of Friends, and we talked about a way that you would kind of
create like clan gamer tags or whatnot. We created one. It's the VGO community. It's VGO space community. If you want to be a part of it, send us a message, an invite. We'll add you. Depending on how many invites we get, we might have to, create additional ones.
Make it two, right? But get them each on each other's list, and we'll all be connected.
Yeah, they'll all be connected in some way, shape, or form. At some point, one of us will, probably not me, because I don't have a working 360 at the moment. We'll take control of it. We'll make sure we change the gamer tag and everything. Just be patient, because it's not something that, it's not one of our main gamer tags. So,
should we let maybe one of our listeners or forum members administer this?
Take over it? That would be an interesting idea.
No.
All right, Kyle.
Not yet over control.
No, but to be honest, though, it is, for the most part, it is pretty easy to manage. So just be patient.
So speaking of community,
we need to consult the contest bot.
We have a winner, I believe.
That's right.
We have to ask contest bot here. Let me boot him up. Kyle, do you have that password again for him?
Who wins Call of Duty 4? This is the big game that everybody wanted to win. We got a lot more entries.
Password is 00 destruct.
Kyle,
0.
You're doing is that good? Can you hear him?
That's awesome.
It's not working. I can't hear him. You're going to have to translate. What did he say?
It's funny. I could have swore a couple weeks ago someone told me this bot could not speak and would never speak. What?
That sounds like the beginning of a Duran Duran song. What is it, John? Who wins?
John, I think you're going to have to translate.
I think he just said Phil Donahue. Sergeant Lugnuts? Sergeant Lugnuts, you win Call of Duty 4. Yeah, right. I'm not into robots. Spots.
So, Sergeant Lugnuts, you need to send John a message over Xbox Live. This game tag.
Yep, with your address and your name and all that good stuff.
John, listen to it.
That's right. You need to send me a message through Xbox Live to prove that you indeed are Sergeant Lugnuts. SGT Lugnuts to BlackDog7, BLKDog7. Send me a message with your address and name. Well, I know your name, but send me a message with your address, and I will get that in the mail ASAP. And our little friend in Brooklyn who won PGR4, he should have got his already. It went on Friday, so.
Oh, good.
Awesome. So if you want to send us a comment, contest is over, but it doesn't mean you can't send us email. You can send those questions, comments, or whatever to contact@videogameoutsiders.com.
That's right. And just because the contest is over doesn't mean it's time to tear down those gamer picks from your gamer cards, right?
That's my line, John.
Is it?
Yeah, of course you can call us. That's your line.
Of course you can give us a phone call. As soon as I get the VGO show notes open.
How could you not remember?
It's
206-202-1153.
And of course you can leave us a voicemail at 206-1153. That's 206-1153.
What? You forgot? Okay, never mind.
What?
206 is the area code. You said 206, but you forgot about the 202.
It's 206-202-1153. That's 206-202-1153. You know what's going to happen? I'm going to be stranded somewhere. My car's going to be broken down, and I'm going to need that phone number to get to the nearest gas station, and I won't be able to remember it, and I'll die.
That's quite an interesting concept.
Leave us a message. Or leave us a review at the iTunes Music Store. Do a search for us, Video Game Outsiders, and leave us a review.
That's right. You can also get our logo on the Xbox Live Marketplace if you haven't done that already. We would appreciate it if you did, because we'd like to see our shiny little logo in your gamer tag. And it's in the All Games Community Picture Pack 2.
And it's of just course, Community Picture Pack 2.
Okay, yeah. But we're in with the other All Games pictures if you get confused. And you can also listen to our show streamed live on All Games at 9 o'clock Eastern on allgames.com.
Speaking of gamer tags and whatnot, if you need help with this, something, with trying to find something, or possibly even also trying to win something at the same time, might it make a suggestion? And not just with us, just in general.
In life. This is a tip for life that we're giving you right now.
Don't be all sweary and hostile if you need help and want something.
And chances apologizing are, the next day, nice touch, but...
We had an angry... I thought he was kidding. I didn't know.
But the thing was, even the apology came off a little hostile.
Well, he was drunk, so we understand. We've all been there.
No. I haven't been there.
Just keep that.
Oh, I've been there. That's like every night for me. Before I go to
bed. Whatever. You alky.
Beat my wife and then go to bed.
Oh, God.
I'm sorry, honey.
Don't forget to head over to our website, www.videogameoutsiders, for show notes, episode archives, and our fantastic forums, which...
You can't call them fantastic forums, Kyle.
Oh, that's right, we can.
Okay. Our wonderful forums.
Our wonderful forums have a lot of great people on them. There's always great conversations going there, and it's also the best place to find us during the week.
Video Game Outsiders, out!
And Kyle, I just posted a link over there for you.
Michelle, it's like 55% Alliance.
No, it's...
45% Horde.
Uh-huh, whatever. Wow, Tent on the Hammer, doesn't lie. We'll see you guys next week. Christmas episode. We didn't even promote that.
Oh, my God. Well, let's promote it right now.
Christmas episode next week.
Mrs. Claus is going to be on.
Mrs. Claus may be on. Who will she be?
Or will she even be on at all? And there you have it. Episode number 108 is in the can. And that was a pretty good episode, I think. Ed Freeze, how about that? I got to tell you, personally, that was a huge deal to me to have him on. I mean, that guy has been around the block. I mean, he has been at Microsoft since the beginning. He's one of the first guys to work on Microsoft Office, which, you know, as we all know, changed the world, right? And he was right there, one of the first guys on Xbox. And, as we all know, changed the gaming world in many ways. So, and he's also the guy that was responsible for getting Bungie on board and getting Rare on board, good or bad, but he was the guy. So that was a big deal. And you know what, going into this, you know, when we heard about Fingerprints, we didn't realize that Ed Freeze was the guy behind all this. So very interesting. So hope you guys enjoyed the interview, because I definitely did. Anyway, episode 108 is in the can. That song there was Your Luck from my band Radio Slave. Hope you guys enjoyed that. And we will see you next week for our Christmas spooktacular. And we have absolutely nothing planned, so hopefully we can come up with something. So anyway, talk to you guys next week, and thank you so much for listening. Bye-bye.